Hey, kids. You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles, and pancakes. The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Aki and Bree are here. How are you two doing?
Pretty good.
Pretty good, still.
Not still. This is our first recording of the day, Aki.
Okay.
You don't know how shows work and continuity works, Aki.
No, I don't. Not even remotely. I don't attempt to know either.
Bree, what are you going to do with her?
I've actually had that job on a film before. I worked on a short film and did continuity. That was interesting.
Huh.
Okay, because I know you, I have to ask, what kind of film was it?
Oh, God.
Oh, it was just like a low-budget film about some... it was like a really terrible story about a poet in a bar. I don't know.
Okay.
That's a story for another time. Maybe after the break. Jacob will be here later in the show. We got some news and reviews to take care of in the second half of the show, but we are kicking things off. We've got our friend Keith joining the show from Play Indies. Keith, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How's it going over there?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those days. It's warm. It's summer. I'm sweating.
It is warm for sure, and half of Washington is on fire, so you can't even go outside. So it's quite not the fun party here.
No. We had torrential storms the other day. You guys are getting fires. Bree and Aki deal with tornadoes. So,
oh, yeah.
Earth is just doing great right now.
Yeah. In the little city about an hour from my house, there was a news report that went out that said if you're outside for an hour, it's like smoking six cigarettes. Which is just insane to think about.
Holy shit.
Air quality index at my house right now is 167. It's insane. So.
Yeah.
So stay indoors.
Yeah.
Play video games.
Which leads us into our next topic.
You.
For the people
who don't know who you are, give us the rundown of who you are and why you're joining us today.
Yeah, I'll go through like a little resume job interview style. So I come from just the video game community in general. I was a big Xbox fan growing up and knew that I wanted to go into video game design for my career. So I went to I went through a video game program in college and ended up moving out to Seattle on a whim to try to land my first job in the industry, which ended up being at Xbox. I worked backwards compatibility for the Xbox One X and tested 700 games to make sure that they performed as good or better on the console than previous consoles. So it was one of those things that, like, what was that?
I missed that program, backward compatibility.
Yeah, it was a cool thing. I mean, I was the night shift. There was two shifts for that job, and I was basically there was a 8 to 4, and then we were 4 to 2 a.m. So I was the night shift doing that. Over the course of my time there, I tested 700 games. It was crazy. But at the same time, I was working a day shift at also Xbox. I was working for Mixer. At the time, it was Beam. And I was doing a job. I was actually teaching people how to stream, but specifically for commercial purposes. So, like, basically, we're running a program where We had a channel that was essentially running 24/7 that would host pre-order slots for upcoming games. So I had to teach people how to like stream and sell pre-order slots and things like that. It was very interesting. So did both of those jobs for a little while. A lot of Microsoft does things on contracts. So both of my contracts ended at the same time. And I just decided I'll try streaming myself. I grew my own channel on Mixer and ended up being one of the top 10 streamers on Mixer for quite a while. I took that and reached out to Tiny Build in their infancy and said, "Hey, you guys don't really do too much on social media. Do you want some help?" And they said no. And then the next day they said yes. So then next day I went up, met them for lunch, and joined them to run all socials, community, content creator, like program stuff for Tiny Build. I did that for about 4 years. By the time I left there, I had been on 32 games. Oh, wow. And I was a producer for, I was the like main producer for 3 games, and I had been a producer for like 8 or so. But the one that most proud of, I mean, there's the 3 that I was on, I'm very proud of. 2 of them are more well-known titles, which one of them was Totally Reliable Delivery Service.
Awesome game.
Loved that game, and I still work with the team, or well, at least one of the devs today. And the other one was Streets of Rogue.
Ooh.
Okay.
That game was so much fun, and now Streets of Rogue 2, I don't remember if it's out or if it's coming out, but solid game. I did that for quite a long time, and then hopped to a couple different studios since then. And then after that, where you guys know me from is I was community lead for ID at Xbox for a year and a half until about just about 1 month ago, about 5 weeks ago, when Microsoft had their big layoff. Now I'm doing my own thing, which is why I'm here. I've been building this thing with a business partner of mine for the last 2 years, which is basically doing content creator distribution services for indie games. And what that means to, you know, normal people is, if an indie game wants to get the word out about their game, they generally try to give keys to content creators. But a lot of times indie devs don't know how to get like in contact with content creators. Unfortunately, my partner and I have been working with content creators for the last 8 to 10 years. So we have just lists of contacts. So we've built out this platform where we're inviting tons of content creators to come join the platform. And on the platform, indie devs can list their games. The creators can go request a key and play the game whenever they have time. We have a like obligation rule on the platform that it should be within 30 days of viewing the key. Once you've created content for the game, you just submit the link back to the developer, and the developer, you know, gets content from being able to distribute a key. So creators get free games, developers get content made from like actual gamers and people who are interested in actually playing their game. So yeah, long tangent on how I got here, but that's about where it's at now.
And it's been a crazy ride. We first bumped into each other when you started with the ID at Xbox team. Unless we somehow like passed each other while you were at Tiny Build. It's very possible I may have.
It's very possible. I met thousands of content creators while I was at Tiny Build.
We talked to a lot of people from Tiny Build on this show over the years. So
I'm certain that I've, you know, been in contact with at least the people that you've talked to. And if you ever received a key for a game from my first game would have been, it was just after Hello Neighbor. I joined for Graveyard Keeper. We were just releasing it on, what were we? It wasn't on, I think Graveyard Keeper had just launched. From that point all the way through, I can't even remember what my last game, I think Potion Craft or whatever the name of that game was. Anyway, there was a lot of games and it was a lot of time.
I'm a Tiny Build fan. I like what they put out.
I am too. So. Yeah.
But yeah, we first started talking when you started with the ID team, and I gotta say, since the layoffs and since they let you go, kind of personal opinion, kind of turned to shit. There are no streams, there are no posts, yep. There's nothing related to getting the word out about indie games, and you pushed so hard to make indie games seen on that platform, and it sucks that they got rid of someone so passionate about what they were doing.
Yeah, I mean, my whole life revolves around indie games, so it really was, and because I grew up as an Xbox kid, it was just the perfect role for me. I occasionally talk to some of my previous colleagues, but like I don't know, you know, what's going on or anything like that. I'm hopeful that, you know, those channels will start getting kicked back up again. I'm certain that, you know, just there's so much figuring things out, you know, post layoffs and all that. I doubt that it has anything to do with, like, you know, just not wanting to continue posts or anything like that. I really do think it's like just trying to grab a hold of the wheel and just figure out things again. So, but
yeah, they've been off the tracks for a while.
Yeah, I mean, well, I would definitely.
I know
definitely
you can't
try.
Say much, but we can.
we definitely tried to make sure that as much like word about indies and supporting our partners as much as possible was going out there. So,
And that's what definitely drew me to your talk about Play Indies. I was lucky enough to kind of like test an early version of the site and look through it and be one of the early creators to sign up for it. We're going to be covering our first game from it later on in this show. Bree's going to be talking about I Eat Paintings.
Which, nice.
That was the first one that caught my eye when I saw the site go live. I'm like, I Eat Paintings when guards aren't. I want that one.
Yeah, it's so fun.
That was the perfect fit for us to start with. So yeah,
that's awesome. I mean, there's so many cool games. Like being at like ID at Xbox, I got to see a lot of games, obviously, as they were coming through the pipeline. So I got to see, you know, games before their announcements and stuff like that, which was always really cool. And now I'm seeing, because obviously, you know, a lot of games will come out on Steam first before they go to consoles. It's the natural process of game development. So now I'm seeing even more games that are in the pipeline because it's just devs wanting to market them and stuff. And so, yeah, I had never heard of I Eat Paintings. I mean, there's a whole bunch of really cool games that are starting to appear on the platform now. And it's pretty exciting to see. So, I'll definitely be taking a listen once this podcast comes out, so I can hear how I Eat Paintings went.
So what draws you to indies over, say, a AAA game?
I think it really is just the passion. It turns like less into, you know, let's make a game for profit, even though, like, I'm not saying that AAA devs don't care about their game. They absolutely do. One of my favorite game series of all time is Halo. And so, you know, Halo couldn't be any more of a AAA title. But there's just something special about, like, you know, 1 to 5 and even sometimes larger teams, but, you know, 1 to 5 developer teams making a game that just makes them happy, and just seeing like the creativity that comes out of that, you just get such like genuine desire to want to make you know, their baby stronger, you know, like what makes it special. And it's where all the like incredibly unique ideas come out of play. Like anything from like Cult of the Lamb, you know, very, very, it's still like a genre that you've seen before and you still see after, but like it's still inspired a whole new, like, slew of games that wanted to make something similar. And even when you're mimicking a certain genre or play style, you can still make it so different. And then you get like, you know, stuff that comes out of nowhere. Like obviously Mecha Chameleon is huge. And you're talking about two devs out of Japan that like came out of nowhere and goes ahead and makes, what they make
the like viral 60, game
yeah $60 million or something like that. It's just crazy. And like my favorite game of all time right now, which is crazy, is Expedition 33, technically an indie game, even though larger team, and it's even more wild to say that it's my favorite game right now because I don't like JRPGs, but really? the story, it's just not the combat style that I enjoy. And the funny part is I like RTSs, so I like turn-based games and stuff like that. But JRPGs don't necessarily do it for me, but the story was just unbelievable. Best story of a game I've ever experienced. And so you just feel so much passion come out of smaller teams into making their game just stand out. So I think that tends to draw me towards the indies. It's less about you know, the paychecks and making money, especially when it comes to like, you know, AAA. In the end, you know, have to make money for the stockholders and everything like that, which is fine. You know, you just want to make sure that you're supporting your investors, the people who believe in you making a product. But when you have a team that doesn't have that, and it really is just make a game that's cool enough that people are going to like and want to actually spend their money on it, it's just a different feeling.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of times indies respect my time more because they come from people that are having to be respectful of that themselves. And that's like a meaningful connection, I think, that we have between like the developer and the user in that case with indies. So.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a good, there's definitely a good balance, generally when it comes to like, making sure that there isn't just stuff that's meant to occupy too much of your time in a game. Like everything feels intentional and meant to be something that's really accomplished within the game. Again, like not just using up your time. And then that equates a lot better to that cost analysis that a lot of gamers try to make. Exactly. The like dollar per hour of gameplay is what a lot of gamers try to do. So if you're spending $10 a game, you should get 10 hours of gameplay out of it, kind of a thing. You tend to get that a lot more in games. And even if you don't equate to that, such as like a game like Superliminal, if you guys have ever played that.
Technically, love that game.
One of my favorite puzzle games of all time. Technically, Superliminal, you can beat in under half an hour.
Absolutely.
But holy, what an experience of a game. And it's worth every penny. I don't even know what it costs, but I would pay $30 for that game.
I think it's like a $15 to $20 title. Yeah, that was a very good one.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking up the price because I'm curious.
It's got to be.
I think Aki doesn't like that game.
No.
I was trying so hard not to say anything about that fucking game.
No.
No, I fucking hate that game.
Puzzles or what?
No, I love puzzle games. I don't... My biggest issue is you can't change the orientation of things that you're holding, and therefore wherever they fall is just how they are, and that has fucked me so many times that I got just real tired of playing the goddamn game, because I'm like, this is just pissing me off, because I need it to be at this angle so I can reach this fucking thing, and it keeps falling on its side, and I have to keep fucking with it. And
on sale now for $7.99.
Oh, go pick it up. It's a great game.
More days.
$8, well worth it. Did you, so if you weren't a fan because of just some, like, some of the control struggles with Super Limited. Did you try Viewfinder?
No, I did not, but that one looks significantly more up my alley. That game.
Viewfinder is fabulous, yeah.
Viewfinder is so good. The story is really good. It's sad, but also just beautiful. And then on top of that, it's a lot less of the, like, needing to place objects. So I think you'll lose some of the struggle that you were having there, because it's more about, for those who don't know Viewfinder, it's taking pictures and then you enter the picture, but you're still in the same world. So like you're taking a picture in order to manipulate space. So because it's only just taking pictures and you're not placing things too often, I think that that would resolve some of the struggles you were having with Superliminal.
Yeah, I usually like puzzle games. That's one of the very, very few puzzle games that I really hate. I very rarely even dislike a puzzle game. They're usually just fine if I'm like, eh, it exists. They're still fine.
You can hear how
I
worked up she is in her voice right now.
Oh yeah, I'm getting madder the more I think about it. Yeah, no.
So what were some of your other favorite indie games you can think of off the top of your head? I mean, no particular pressure of like a top five or anything. Just like name some cool indie games that you would love other people to know about.
Yeah, well, I mean, so some of my most favorite ones are tend to be some of the more popular ones. Like everyone loves Limbo, but my favorite one in the series is actually Inside. If you haven't played Inside, oh my God. That was my favorite game until Expedition 33 came out. Inside is just a beautiful game. I very much enjoy puzzles. I have a great time just exploring, like just areas or, it's less about the puzzle and just seeing how the puzzle affects the world and what else you can discover within the world. I really
got one for you.
Okay.
Have you played Chroma Zero?
No, but I think I know the name.
All right. So what you were just saying about seeing how the world works, that is exactly what this game is about. I would highly recommend you check it out. It's a Metroidvania. How it operates, and it's a really cool experience.
Okay, yeah.
You just wanted to say Metroidvania again.
I know, right?
Outside of puzzles, I had a blast playing through 33 Immortals. That game phenomenal. I'm super into roguelikes, so roguelikes and roguelites are just my absolute favorite genre. Played through a bunch of Hades 2, need to finish it still. I recently actually just finished playing, it's so good. Let me open up my phone and see if I can find it.
What's it about?
It's a roguelite. It's all in Portuguese. It just came out not too long ago. Hell Clock. Yes.
Connor said, I bet he'll say Hell Clock.
Oh my God. Hell Clock is one of the best roguelikes I've played in a while. Like more people, if you enjoy roguelikes, more people need to play this game. It's so well done. I have no idea the size of the team, but I don't imagine it being that large of a development team. It's all in Portuguese, but you have translations on the bottom. And it, I mean, this, the story was so disturbing, and it's so interesting too, because it's a fantasy style game. You know, you're like in this like limbo hell style fighting demons and all this stuff. But the surrounding story is actually a true story, which was insane to discover. And it's like some world history stuff that I granted, like I grew up in Florida, we don't have the best education, but like, it's not stuff that I had ever heard of before. And it was really disturbing to learn about. Yeah, I don't want to spoil too much because you discover a lot as you play the game. You don't really know what's going on at the start, but as you progress through, and the ending credits cinematic is really, really well done. But yeah, I went through. I haven't 100%ed it yet, but I did beat it on every difficulty. Phenomenal game. It was so good. Yeah, so I like my roguelikes and my roguelites. And then the other category that I love the most is card games. So Inscription is the best card game that I've ever played.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I don't typically like card games of that style, but Inscription was fantastic. And I'm actually a fan of like Mullins games in general. Now I've like gone over to the Steam side of things to play the stuff that hasn't come over to console, just because his games are so like weird and wild. And yeah.
Yeah. For those who probably have heard of Inscription, but might not have played it, it goes way beyond what you initially see. The story is so, it like for a card game, the story is so good. It's unbelievable. But yeah, I love my card games. Played a lot of Black Jacket that just came out not too long ago. Mm-hmm. Very similar to games like Inscription or Ring of Pain or things like that. Highly recommend. Inscription's older, but definitely recommend playing it if you haven't, and you can probably get it on the cheap. So
let's steer the conversation back to play indies for a bit.
Yeah.
I'm a new content creator, and I want to get involved in the site. What's it about? What do I do?
Yeah, so basically how play indies works is, you know, if you are literally a brand new content creator, you know, we do have some minimal requirements to be able to join. It's not like specific numbers, but what we look for is we have an application process. So you go to playindies.com and you sign up as a creator. We are basically looking for content creators that are one, either established, have a following and people who are streaming consistently or creating YouTube videos. And we're very soon expanding into, written media. So if you're like IGN or any written media, it doesn't matter. You could, sign up and just do written based content on indies. But basically you come to the platform, right now. In order to sign up, you have to link your Twitch or your YouTube account to the platform. And then, that would basically just tie your Play Indies account to your Twitch or your YouTube account. And that just makes it so that way we can know, you know, that you are the content creator you say that you are. You know, you can't just come in and say, I'm Markiplier, and not prove it, you know. Yeah, you're just coming through and you go through the platform, see which indies are interesting for you. We have the ability for developers to list their games from mobile games to consoles to VR and PC. If you make specific content only on Nintendo Switch, there's going to be indies for you to be able to request Switch codes for. So you're coming through and applying for keys. Once you apply for a key, the developer on the other side comes through and they say, okay, let me look to see who has requested keys. They'll be able to come through and say, oh, hey, this person requested my keys, but they only really stream puzzle games, and this is a first-person shooter. It's not really the right audience for them, and they can deny keys to be sent to you because you don't stream the right content and you're not exactly the right fit. Or if you are the type of content creator that they're looking for, or maybe they don't care, you know, what kind of genre that you normally stream, and, you know, if you showed interest, they want to give you a key anyway, they can approve. You then get a message in your inbox saying that you were approved for a key, and you'll be able to view the key, at which point you have 30 days to create content. So you'll either make your YouTube video or your stream your game. Once you've done that, you could just link the VOD or the YouTube video in the key redemption location and send, and it gets sent back to the developer. And then you can go on and request more keys. As you keep doing that throughout the platform, we have like our own internal ranking system. So the more you utilize the platform, the higher Play Indies rank you gain. And we provide benefits back to the creators for doing so. So we have like homepage slots where creators can be essentially advertised. And so as you climb ranks, you unlock the ability to be randomly placed in those locations. And then we're working on a whole bunch of other things, such as like once you gain playing these ranks, you'll automatically be entered into giveaways to receive like Steam gift cards or whatever it might be. And so, yeah, it's less of a social media kind of platform and more of a space for you to be able to discover indie games that maybe you wouldn't have seen before, just based on your own preferences. And really just support indie devs as much as possible. And in the upcoming future, right now we're in our soft launch period. So there are plenty of bugs and we're fixing them on a daily basis. We tend to put out an update generally every 2 days, fixing as many bugs as we can that are supplied by creators and developers in our site feedback channel on Discord. And then we're also building a version of the site that will scale up and down all the way to mobile, because right now the site is only viewable on full screen desktop. This was just so that way, as we were developing the platform, you know, as we caught bugs, we wanted to make sure that everything was in the right locations, that we didn't need to rearrange UI and rebuild things from scratch. So now that we have like a really solid foundation of what the site is meant to be, we're building the scaling version of it. And we just actually received our first prototype of it this week. So we are we're trying our best to try to get it done for Gamescom. Might come a little bit after. Maybe it'll arrive in time. We'll see. Once we have the full version of the site, we'll consider that as the full launch of the platform. And we're going to start working on our next larger features, which is like, paid creator activations. We're looking at, you know, the potential of doing like the old like Twitch bounty system, kind of deal. So if you basically a developer will say, hey, we want to pay like, let's say $10,000 to content creators for playing our game kind of a thing. And then basically creators will be able to go, request or redeem a key, stream or make a YouTube video on the game and then get paid out based on, you know, the content that they make. So, whatever the, you know, boundaries are that are set by the developer. And we have everything on the platform very transparent. So, we've seen a lot of systems in place in the past where, you know, if the developer puts up money for going out to distribution for content creators, that, you know, it's a portion of the money that ends up in the content creator's hands. But we do everything on our platform is transparent. You can view all of our pricings by just visiting the website kind of a thing. We have nothing to hide. We truly do want to make a platform where, you know, it is supporting indies and, you know, Yeah.
I would also say you're supporting the creators. It's one thing I like so far about Play Indies is that there seems to be a good amount of focus on the content creators and not just the games that they want to play. You know, you've got profiles that you can fit. You can look at creators on the site. So if you are a developer coming in to try and find people, that's very upfront and accessible. But it's also something like I'm looking at as a creator to find fellow creators to possibly collaborate with who are also interested in indies. Because I don't necessarily in my own friend group, say, have people to play, I don't know, Mecha Chameleon with. So, you know, that's a really nice content creator forward. You know, what is that approach for you about? What else is different from your site than other key distribution sites?
Yeah. So because I started my career in the content creator world as a streamer, and then moved into the more development side. I've been able to experience both sides of the coin and understand what both sides are looking for. So being able to support the creators, a lot of these platforms tend to, you know, mention, you know, we have this many content creators that you can distribute your keys out to, but the developers don't actually know who they are or if they're active or anything like that. And so it's just kind of like this void that you're distributing keys out to. And we wanted transparency the entire way through. So as a developer, when you are distributing keys out, you can see every single content creator that's requesting a key, inspect them, go to their channel, everything before you even distribute out a key. And then once the content creator is approved for the key, both parties have the ability to message each other. So if the content creator, you know, puts in a request for a key and says, hey, I'm requesting a key, but I'd really like to do a podcast with you talking about the development of your game. The developer can approve the key and then respond and say, hey, I'd love to hop on your podcast or whatever it is. And so, you know, the transparency of being able to allow those relationships to being able to be built out is what's really special. It's something that I tried really hard with when I was at Tiny Build, was making sure that every single content creator who joined us through the content creator program that I built for Tiny Build had a direct line of communication to me. So that way, if they had any questions, if they needed anything, that they could do that. And so I wanted to make sure that that got built in directly into Play Indies. And for the content creators, like being able to work with each other, we don't currently have the ability for creators to message each other because we didn't want to build a social media platform. Right. But what we do have is the Discord, where creators are able to join the Discord and obviously talk with developers, but also talk to fellow creators. And we have like creator collaboration channels where, you know, creators can talk to each other and say, hey, I'm requesting a key for this game. Would anybody else want to join me or anything like that? Right. And then, like you said, if there's creators on the platform that you, you know, you're going through and you're searching, you know, based on people who have similar genre tastes or anything like that, you'd be able to just easily find them within the creator database. It's open to see, or, you know, the creator, we also got feedback that like creators, don't necessarily want to have their public or their profile public to everyone. So they can toggle that off in the settings as well. Nice. That was an implementation that we brought in, I think 2 weeks ago because of creator feedback. The only disclaimer about that is because the platform is made for developers to discover creators, developers will always be able to see the creator, but right, the creator right. can turn it off for anyone who's not signed in or to other creators. So, okay. Yeah, lots of cool stuff there, but it really is just the end goal for the developers is get the game into content creators' hands and have the content actually be created. And then for the creators, it really is collaborations and relationship building and providing free content. And then eventually, providing paid opportunities. So we are trying to make a platform that really benefits everyone in the most positive ways possible.
Piggybacking off that a bit, I wanted to ask, you know, as a user, there's Keymailer, Evolve, Press Engine, Lurkit, GameSite, Play Indies Now, all these other places that we could go to for keys. For developers, what makes it so that they would want to go to Play Indies over these other sites? What are you doing to draw developers to your platform?
Yeah, there's a couple of layers to that, and like I definitely don't want to like speak poorly on any of our competitors because I used them
sling shit. Do it.
No. I used them as a content creator and I used them as a developer, so I understand the benefits that they provide, and I still highly recommend that people do use them. There's nothing like inherently wrong with those platforms. What we are providing is a lot of transparency and the ability to build relationships. Some of the platforms don't allow you to really build a relationship in the same way that we do. Some of them are, you know, just mass distribution to creators' inboxes, like to their email addresses, which is fine. That strategy does work. Ours is less of that and more of the ability for you to be able to target the creators that you're wanting to distribute to. However, if you do want to just mass approve creators for your keys, you can do that as well within our platform. The other portion of that, you know, we kind of wanted to build out is that the world is expensive now and indies don't have marketing budgets. And so one of the things that we really wanted to do was, just make it super affordable for solo developers or small teams that don't have marketing budgets, because you go to some of, these places, even PR firms or anything like that. And like, to do like a 1 month distribution can be $10,000, but who has $10,000 in their pocket, you know?
So
we basically have it laid out to where if you want to distribute keys to content creators, first of all, we give you 5 free off the bat, so you could try the platform and see if you like it. You don't have to pay a dime to get onto the platform and distribute your first 5 keys. But then after that, the keys, basically how we have it is if you want to distribute keys, it's just $1 per key. So if you want to distribute out to 500 content creators, it's $500. It's actually cheaper when you buy it in bulk, but basically we just wanted to keep it super straightforward and affordable for developers, to be able to do that. We're not trying to, make a lot of money off of single developers or anything like that. You know, make a $10,000 deal or something like that. It really is. Everyone is able to use this based on how much, you know, money you are wanting to spend. If you only have $100 this month to distribute keys out to content creators, you could get it in the hands of 100 content creators that you specifically want to send it to. Meaning like, it's not just a mass distribution to inboxes. These are content creators that want to play your game and you are manually saying yes or no. You know what I mean? It's a little different than like, I'm giving you $100. I want you to put it in the inbox of 100 content creators. You don't know if they're going to do it. You know, if they're going to play the game, you don't know if they're even interested in your game. And on ours, it's, you know, these people are interested in your game because they requested it, you know?
I think sending a key is my least favorite way of being approached about a game. Like, if you want me to see your game, talk to me first. Don't just send me a key right away. Because then I feel like I'm obligated to do something, even though I don't know who the fuck you are. So I like when people just send like
for me too.
Like a, hey, this is our game. If you want to claim it, it's on Press Engine now. Click the button if you want it. Otherwise, you can reject it. That's what I like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we actually have like based on that specific comment of like just receiving a key in your inbox isn't preferred, and you'd rather the developer reach out to you. On our platform, like not only can the creator obviously reach or request a key for a game, but if a developer did want to cold call, you know, just send an inbox message to the creator, if a creator said or a developer says, I'm looking for podcasts, so I'm going to just message podcasts, reach out to see if they're interested in playing the game. They would find, let's say, your podcast, and send you a message and say, hey, found your podcast. I'm interested in you playing the game, and send you essentially a cold call message on the platform. And then you'd be able to just go back and see, oh, who's this developer? Let me check out their game. And then if so, you can request the key from there. Right now, it's a little bit more manual. You still have to go to the game to request a key. But we're implementing a process right now, which is if a developer did do a cold call within the inbox message, it'll provide you a button to just request a key or to visit the game directly from the inbox. So we're trying to streamline it even further than it already is.
So. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. So you've talked a little bit about it already, but what are your plans for protections for vetting content creators to minimize fraud, like key reselling and the like? Are you going to do like creator recertifications in the future or anything like that?
So yeah, basically how the platform is meant, because it's individual requests and things like that, the developer can see who they're sending a key to, right? Now on our side, when we get an application to join Play Indies as a content creator, when we get an application, we actually go through and check every single content creator. So we're about to hit our 800th content creator joining the platform, probably today. And what we do is the application comes in, we check to see who they are as a content creator, and make sure that, you know, they're not a bad person spewing hate online, because we're very, mm-hmm. you know, pro humanity, you know, human yes. rights, and making sure that people aren't bad people. And so we check for not only that stuff, but we also check to see your last 30 and your last 90 days of either your streaming or your YouTube content, okay. to make sure that, one, you actually are playing indie games, because if you only play, let's say, League of Legends, and that's the only game you ever play, you're not an indie content creator, and you're right. like, what's the chances that you're actually going to play the game on the platform? So we actually do reject people who only stream either single games, like it's their main game, they never play anything else. As well as we check to see whether you are actively creating content, and the majority of the people who we, deny, on the platform are, not that we have a ton, actually a lot of the people who are applying are legitimate content creators who are actively making content, but the ones that we do deny generally are people who haven't created content either within the last 30 days or within the last 90 days. And so that way the developer has the active understanding that every content creator on the platform is actively making content. In addition to that, we've built for those who know what like Sully Gnome is, a lot of people like Twitch streamers or even developers know that you can check like Sully Gnome for your Twitch stats, or you check like Social Blade mm-hmm. for your YouTube stats. We built our own version of Sully Gnome within the platform. So
nice.
once you sign up, it is our essentially it's a bot that we've built, scans your every single person on our platform. It scans your Twitch channel every 5 minutes, and is looking to see whether you are live. And if you're live, it's pulling the analytics the same way that Sully Gnome is doing it. So
nice.
It's checking to see what your current view count is, the thumbnail for the stream title, all that stuff. And then it's doing all the calculations on our end to determine your, you know, your CCV, your how many view count, or like your viewing hours per stream, per average over week, over month, things like that. So that's actively running right now. And there's a disclaimer on every single creator's profile that says, hey, just letting you know, this person joined within the last 30 days, so the averages and the numbers may not be accurate. But after the 30-day mark, your monthly average is going to be pretty accurate. So yeah, we do make sure that for the safety of the developer side of things, that the content creators that are reaching out to them, they'll be able to see what their like last 30-day CCVs are, or if they've even streamed at all, or created YouTube videos or whatever. So knowing that you are an active content creator is super important. And then on top of which, the like reselling of keys is a huge problem in the distribution, services for indie devs. Ours theoretically eliminates that because the content creator has a 30-day obligation once the key is viewed. So on the platform, you can be approved of a key, and then you have 30 days to accept the key. If you don't accept the key, it can stay there as long as the developer wants to keep it there. But after the 30 days, the developer can recall the key. So that way they can distribute it out to someone else. Obviously they don't have to, they can keep it in your, key redemption location. And if you do redeem the key, once the key is redeemed, you have 30 days to, submit the content back to the developer. If you don't submit the content back to the developer, you receive a strike on your profile, which at that point, all developers will be able to see that you did not, complete the campaign, and therefore, you know, you theoretically,
you're high risk. Yeah.
Yeah. You're less trusted of a content creator at that point. And then, you know, after, you know, two or three strikes, whatever, when it comes down to it, we'll have to determine like, okay, this person is too much of a risk. We're going to have to remove them from the platform. So, and we have the ability to just toggle the current active status of creators on the platform and, you know, have them on hold where they can't request keys. But it gives us an opportunity to talk to them, or we can just, you know, straight up toggle them to be banned from the platform and they can't, you know, utilize the platform any longer. So the developers will have the reassurance that any key distributions should very much be legitimate key requests.
Mm-hmm.
So I know we've been chatting for a while. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
I don't know. We really are just trying to spread the word as much as possible. You know, the, this is a passion project that, I haven't really talked much about my partner. My partner, her name is Kate. She actually lives over in Australia. So her and I actually work pretty opposite hours, which makes it really nice. Means that, you know, while she's working on that side of the world, creators who are having problems, you know, in the middle of the night for me, because I'm in Seattle, still have the support, or developers as well, still have the support from her. But she's been in the industry just as long as I have been. And she actually, comes from Vicarious PR and from Evolve PR. So content creators who have been working with either of those PR agencies, or developers, she has a amazing, resume of games that she's been able to work on, may recognize, you know, her name as well. Her name is Kate, Kate Hall. But I've
definitely had her in my inbox before.
she's been working in the space quite a long time, and you know, this is just a passion project that we both have wanted to create. And so we started building it, in almost 2 years ago to the day. We started sometime in August. So I'd have to see when our first chats actually were, but yeah, we've been wanting to build this and we finally got it off the ground. We're just, you know, really trying to get it going. And so it's obviously an extremely expensive thing. We've worked with developers and artists for the last 2 years, to build this thing. And so, you know, as much support getting the word out there, recommending, you know, content creators to sign up and use the platform is like tremendously appreciated. If you are a content creator, in your settings page of your profile, there is a referral link. You can use the referral link, and we're going to be doing like a rewards program for people who are referring. You know,
yeah, use my referral link, Carnage.
And then yeah, and then just, you know, spreading the word out to game developers who are, you know, interested in doing content creator relationships and all that good stuff. We want to try to make sure that it's an affordable and easier place for developers to get the word out about their games. And they can start for free. So Was there anything else that I would want to speak about? We're going to Gamescom. I leave in 8 days to go to Gamescom, so that's fun. It'll be my third time in Europe, because when I was working for Tiny Build, there was a portion of time where we were trying to see if I was going to go live in the Netherlands. So I spent time out there for a little while, because one of their headquarters is in a little town called Hilversum. And so going out to Europe, doing a little vacation beforehand. I'm going to go visit Belgium, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, and a couple different parts of Germany. And then we are flying out, myself, Kate, and our head of product, who we brought on towards the end of the project. His name is Antonio. He actually built the content creator distribution platform for Bungie back in the day, the Bungie Foundation to do distribution for content creators and gamers who were donating to Bungie Foundation. And when you would receive, like emblems or, you know, whatever would be received for your donation, he helped build the platform for doing the distributions for that. So, he was kind of a perfect fit for Play Indies. So the three of us are going out there to try to talk to as many indie developers as possible.
Nice.
Now, I'll tell you a good place for indie devs, MAGFest in January.
Yes.
Okay.
I tell everyone, go to MAGFest. Music and Gaming Festival in D.C. National Harbor. It is, I believe this year will be number 24.
In Washington, D.C.?
Yep.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yep. And I have never missed one, and I love it. Yes. Magfest.org. Crazy. You'd be surprised. Past couple of years have been pretty good.
Okay. I just know that sometimes I would go to PAX East and there'd be snow. So.
Well, PAX East is also in Boston. That's a little bit
it's
further
not
up
that
north.
Far. It's not that far.
DC to Boston? That's far enough, man. For weather, that's definitely far enough to matter.
All right, well.
Yeah. Look into MAGFest. When tickets go on sale, I'll let you know. Maybe you could look into getting your crew out there. And they have a big indie game section there, lots of indies there that I'm always bugging them to get into the ID program.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, we'll definitely have to take a look. Yeah, our convention season is generally PAX East, if we can do things with E3, you know, period of time. So now Summer Game Fest and all the other shows that are appearing during that time period. And then this will be our first Gamescom. We do PAX West. We do PAX Australia because she's there. which is, there's another convention that goes on called GCAP, which is essentially GDC for the eastern side of the world. And then I do GDC on this side of the world. And then we are probably going to skip Tokyo Game Show this year and try to do Tokyo Game Show next year. So
I want to go to Japan one day.
It's so much fun.
SML in Japan. Let's do it. Live show. What do you think, everyone? I'll fly out there. Aki, do you have any final questions you want to ask?
No, I'm a derp. I'm good.
She knows her place. Bree.
I do. Let me get back to my notes here. So indies are an accessible way for new streamers to get some cool content to show. As someone who's worked on both sides of the industry, do you have any advice for newer creators who are looking to get into showcasing and reviewing games?
Relationship building. It's how I, when I got started content creating, so I became a larger content creator just based on playing indie games alone. My entire stream was about playing indies, and especially playing indies with people. So any multiplayer games, so try to play multiplayer games with people, but then also just showcasing stories and things like that. But building relationships with developers was unbelievably important to the growth of my channel, and eventually the growth of my career. The reason why I had a relationship with Tiny Build in the first place was because I met them at, I think it was a PAX East, and became friends with their marketing person, who ended up being, you know, my colleague after a while, but ended up becoming friends with her to be able to just request keys for either giveaways or for creating extra content or things like that. And that relationship allowed me to be able to speak with even more developers that they were friends with, or of games that they were working on over time, because Tiny Build is a publisher, so they were releasing about a game per month at the time. So always had new content down the pipeline. So being able to just reach out to developers and say, hey, I'm interested in playing your game, kind of a thing. Developers are usually very keen to saying yes. So long as, like, you're actually going to be playing the game, you know, rather than obviously it getting resold on a site that is no friendly to indies. So, relationship building is huge. And especially building a network of, relationships with other content creators who are dedicated to indies. I can't like stress the amount of value it is to like join, kind of like, I guess you would like call it like clicks or something of indie streamers or gamers that are interested in the same types of content. It brings so much value, and you end up seeing a lot of these groups get formed, like with Markiplier always streaming games with Bob and Wade, right? Like, just the three of them spread those games to each other, and they always end up playing very similar, or if not the same exact games. You can do that with groups of fellow content creators, you know, 5 to 10 of you. And if, you know, if there's 10 groups of the 5 to 10 of you, then the developer has a lot of keys to be able to distribute it out, which makes it really great for them. So there's a big benefit between becoming friends with other content creators that make similar content as you, in order to just make yourself look more valuable for developers. So it's definitely don't be shy and make friends. it really is beneficial to everyone. Your community will love it because you have people that you can banter with and, you know, have fun. And then beneficial to the developer, obviously, for distributing out more keys. And it's beneficial for you because you get more friends, right? You'll have people to talk to and have fun with and just enjoy the time. So relationship building, reach out to devs. The worst thing that the dev will say is no. And what does that matter to you? In the end, it does not matter. If a dev says no, who cares? Move on to the next game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's plenty of games out there to ask. So
yeah.
That's how we got started doing what we did. I saw someone playing a baseball game, and I was like, I wonder if I could just like email the dev and explain that I do a podcast and ask if they want to, you know, like come on and talk to us. Because like we have had insane guests on this show over the years that I can't explain how we've gotten some of them, but I can't get a listener to save my fucking life.
It is actually pretty incredible. Like, even for myself, like, even though I grew a large name on Mixer back in the day, now today I'm also just one of the small guys, but my portfolio of people that I have connections with and am able to, you know, bring onto a stream or be able to talk to or jump on their podcast or anything like that is insane. And it really is just like, the developers who do understand, know that the hour to 2 hours that you spend on a podcast, you never know what it can do for you. So, it's worth just doing it. So long as like you're not, you know, trying to, you know, crunch the last development of your game to make sure that it's ready in time for your launch period or something like that. Make sure you have enough time to be able to do it, but at least get it scheduled for when you do have time. And the same thing with content creators. Like, just like you said, reach out in an email or like with Play Indies. There's no harm in you just going onto the platform and just requesting keys for games. There's no harm. The developer is either going to say yes or no. And if they say no, just play a different game. It does not matter. Yeah. So it's a great strategy.
My final question, I'm going to ask this because you might be allowed to say something about this now. What are your thoughts on the gamer score spam games that keep coming out?
Definitely can't speak on anything about that, but I actually did just have a thought about that because it was announced that Xbox is working on essentially platinum trophies, so platinum achievements. And I thought to myself, I was like, oh my goodness, Carnage and Joe are going to just have like 1,000 of them. Like on launch day, they will have like 1,000 platinum achievements.
I'm not that crazy. You want to talk to Bree here. Bree and Carnage. Yes.
Oh, really?
I'm only at 1.3 million. I didn't realize you collected them as much.
That's crazy. I always knew that, like, obviously Carnage and, like, Fire and people like that always had them. I actually didn't recognize that you did the same amount of collecting, Bree.
I do. I'm getting close to 5 million gamer score right now.
No way!
Carnage is in the 5 million range already. I don't know. I got mad at someone one day for having more gamer score than me because he was being a real jerk about hating Xbox and ended up having more gamer score than me. And that started a lifelong passion of like having more gamer score than jerks. So I love indies and a lot of them are shorter experiences and not, you know, talking to the shovelware. But a lot of them are shorter experiences that respect my time, and that gives me a lot of opportunity to both get gamer score and enjoy games. So, yeah.
Interesting. So, because I haven't had a chance to talk to Carnage yet, and I hadn't really been able to have this conversation with anyone, so I feel like you're a great person to ask here. How do you feel about the idea? Like, I'm sure you love the idea of these platinum achievements coming, But how do you feel about the idea that you're just going to start with like 1,000 of them because there's so many games out there that just, you know, you turn on the game and you have, you know, 1,000
games. Yeah, I am going to have a platinum in a lot of games. Let's see. I can actually give you a number really quick here. Let me just click that button there. Because according to that one tracking site, I have, let's see, 2,348 completed games. That includes owned DLC of the 4,090 games that I have popped an achievement in on the site. So I will start out with a lot of those when they do show up, and that's pretty cool. And that gives me incentive to get more.
Okay, so you see it in the way that the exact opposite way that I thought you were going to see it. Because I thought the people who do achievement collecting and recognize that there's a lot of these like achievement bloat games. I thought it would make these platinum achievements feel less special because you're going to start out the day that they launch, you're going to have 2,500 of them.
So I think that knowing that there's an added value to completing a game over getting just a gamer score number, because that's something I'm stepping back from. I've actually already stepped back and I'm going towards completions. I'm going through my backlog and going back to games I started and trying to actually hunt those completions. That is my new goal. So that platinum system is actually of extra value to me right now to encourage me to get through that backlog and ignore. It's going to be the same trade-off, I guess, of like getting quick points, getting the dopamine hit, getting the quick completion, you know, platinum trophy, whatever, that is going to happen with some of those shovelware type games. But I think it's going to more incentivize me to go back towards those bigger completions, those more important completions that, I started that game that was a longer, bigger, more in-depth, more challenging game. That's a bigger incentive for me to go back to those.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. The way that I kind of saw it, it was more of the way of like, because I will already have so many of them, it doesn't matter so much to me anymore in comparison to the smaller guy who, you know, might have like 3 on the day that it launches. And now it's like, oh, I want to try to get to 10. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's also, I have a massive collection of games having been a streamer for 9-10 years now. Yeah. That I have been doing all these showcases and reviews and that sort of thing. And sometimes just the cycle of reviews and showcases, I don't always get to complete the games. Now I'm going back to play some of these really awesome games I enjoyed. And I still get to get those dopamine hits. That's fun.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I like it. I'm honestly glad that it's a positive thing for you and it wasn't going to end up the way that I thought it was going to be. That definitely makes me happy because I thought that a lot of people were going to be like, it's been so long, I don't care anymore.
That's me. So. I don't care about platinums. Like, I have so many achievement points. I've played so many games. I don't need another number to keep track of.
Yeah.
Like, it's just another number to me. I would rather...
It just gives me a...
I would rather see more control over achievements than more achievements.
Yes, which, like, there's apparently some of that coming.
I don't want 499 games with 5,000 achievement score. That's fucking stupid. I want Forza Horizon with 5,000 achievements, and that's only sitting at 1,000, mm-hmm. but of course DLC will fix that. But yeah, I would rather see more control over achievements than additions to achievements.
Do you think that would be something that they would retroactively fix? Meaning like these 499 games, they would reverse the amount of achievement points that you gain out of them?
I feel like they're already out and they're done.
I was going to say, because then it would nerf the people who have 5 million gamer score. They would get like reverted down and then that would just be a super feel bad.
I think Carnage by the nature be down to of like the 14 system,
gamer score.
Yeah, I think by the nature of the system, they couldn't do that by the rules that they've already set up. But I think changing things like how you get them, an example is Sea of Thieves had some achievements that they made, they nerfed essentially, doing the arena achievements. You can no longer get them because they sunset that part of the game.
I remember.
So no one new to the game can get those, and that kind of almost violated their rules for the achievement system initially. So I think something like changing how you could get those achievements doing something in the new PvP system would be something I would like to see.
Does that mean you can't get a platinum in Sea of Thieves right now?
Well, you can if you're me.
Well, I'm saying if you were to join if you were to join Sea of Thieves today, you couldn't do it.
You would not be able to get. Well, it's technically a content. It's not a DLC, but an add-on or an update. So I don't know. It's not part of the original 1,000 of the game to get those achievements. So I don't know how that would affect a platinum concept. But I mean, if you were going for the 100% completion in all of the achievements of that game. No, as a new player, you could not get those right now, and that is very frustrating for some people, for sure.
I wonder if, because there's got to be games out there that that have that exact problem, but with getting the platinum. I do wonder if, because they're doing this new,
There's Xbox. All sorts of it.
Destiny 2 sunsets and things. I mean, there's broken achievements and. Yeah.
And then on top of that, multiplayer ends for so many games, and now there's no way online to get those achievements.
Sunsetting servers.
Look at games like WWE 2K, where they don't even keep the servers up for 2 years anymore.
Yeah.
Same with NBA 2K. It's just gross how quick they sunset them.
There might be an opportunity, because they're doing the new like Xbox feedback thing. That came out, I think, like literally right after I got hit by the layoff. So I haven't looked too much into it to know exactly how it works. But there's that new like feedback thing that you can submit to. I do wonder, like, once platinum achievements come out, if there will be an opportunity for people to report that achievements cannot be gained in specific games, so that way Xbox can maybe implement a system where if an achievement is literally like soft locked or even hard locked, that the achievement for that game, that specific achievement, would be unlocked for anyone who owns the title. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So it'd be, I would love that, because I would actually go out and buy some older games that I was like, you can't complete this, so I'm not interested in buying it. I'm not one of those people who are like,
for 15 years now, so I don't know if they'll ever get around to fixing that stuff.
I don't care about like my gamer score, but I do really, really care about like having 100% completion in my games. If I can't get all the achievements or something, I don't want to fucking play it, because it's just going to piss me off. So, like, I love the Styx games. One of them has a broken achievement. I refuse to buy it. And it's like, if they fix that, I would so quickly buy that fucking game, because I fucking love those games.
Interesting.
So, yeah, if Xbox made it to where it would be like, okay, this achievement is broke piece of shit, it just unlocks for everybody, I'd be so fucking stoked.
And I think there's got to be a statute of limitations in that. Like, you've got to give a developer a reasonable amount of time to respond to fix a problem. But there's also got to be accountability on Xbox's side to uphold the kind of tenets of their system in the first place. And that's not necessarily something that we've seen on, you know, the side of the line that is happening. But, you know, if they give them 30 days, 60 days or something else to fix it, and then if the developers respond that they can't fix it, well, then sure, go that route. But I'd like to see more accountability to the developers to try and fix those problems.
It's definitely an interesting concept. I could imagine it potentially being implemented, because it The only problem with it is it's a little bit of manual work, in the sense
and
of
they really
like,
hate doing that.
Well,
it's more of like the problem of that it stacks. When you have individual problems, individual solutions are very possible. But when you have a solution to a problem that comes through, but every time the solution needs to be made, it requires multiple hands to be shook in order for it to happen. Yeah. That manual work stacks really fast. That's the problem is like you run into some of this. So it's like, I do wonder if there's a way to be able to automate some of this where like enough player reports of that the bug is actually preventing an achievement to unlock. And then it automatically sends an email to the developer reporting this problem. If some of these automations can come into play, then that's great. When you have to like go into a state of like, you know, an account manager reaching out to the developer and trying to talk to someone about whether they can put out a patch and stuff like that. When you have to do that for, you know, potentially thousands of games, that's a lot of time. So you do need some solutions to come into play where just because you're implementing a fix to something, it doesn't cause an unbelievable increase in the amount of work that needs to be done. Things have to be managed correctly. So,
and there is an entire community on Discord. There's a server dedicated to hunting, not just hunting down these broken achievements and contacting developers, publishers to get them fixed, but they are actually, some of them are former developers or current developers that find their way into code and will work with these developers to try and get these broken achievements fixed. And some people are just not responsive to that. And that's where that accountability comes into play that I wish we could see from Xbox. And I get what you're saying about the stack of work that becomes. But yeah, I mean, they do have the problem getting a category in there that allows for achievement bugs to be reported would be fantastic. And automating that would be fantastic.
Yeah. It's definitely interesting. It's a cool concept. And I'm sure that, you know, it does seem like there is a lot of work being put into fixing community requests. Like I just saw the one that came out this week of voice chats and like party chats and game chats are now included within clips. And that's toggleable. You can turn that off or you can turn it on, which is great. I'm sure that that's been a community request for many years now. And so hopefully as, you know, some of these things come into play and like attention coming to platinum achievements, you know, maybe that's going to bring more eyes to, you know, how some achievement systems are broken and they can be improved. I'd be interested to see how things continue to expand from there. I do, you know, even though I'm part of this massive layoff that's happening, it doesn't mean that I've fallen out of love with the Xbox brand. I may not agree with, you know, some of the leadership's decisions that are happening. But, you know, I think that's in everyone's right to be able to not agree there, especially as, you know, we're seeing layoffs across the industry as a whole. Like, it's not just Xbox, it's every major company is laying off people, and it's such a shame. I think, even though it's okay to be, angry at the decisions that are being made across the board, I still want to see the product improve. So I'm hopeful to see if, you know, like as these more community focused updates are coming out, that they continue to listen. So,
yeah. Well, I hate to do this, but we're going to lay you off again. We have more show we got to take care of.
No worries.
Keith, it has been awesome having you on chatting. Yeah. For the people who want to keep up to date with you, where can people keep in touch with you and what you're doing?
So there's a couple things. Obviously, I was brought on to the show for Play Indies, so check us out at playindies.com. We do have a contact page where you'll be able to find all of our social medias. And so if you want to follow, you know, the status of Play Indies and check out the things that are going on, take a look there. And then for me personally, because I do social media for a living, I try to not use social media for my personal too often. But if you do want to follow, all of my social medias are all BigHungry2x. So I tend to use Instagram the most nowadays, but I do have a Twitter and a Blue Sky and all those different things. So you can follow me there if you'd like.
Very good. Keith, it has been a great time having you on. Everyone else, we are going to take a quick break. We will be back with more show, and unfortunately, Jacob will be here for news and reviews. Aki, don't sound too excited. I know you're just seething in joy over there, right? Yeah, there we go. We're going to play a little music. We'll be back with more show. Keith, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
I appreciate being here. I've known that you guys wanted me on the show for quite a while now during my Xbox days and all that stuff. It's too bad I, you know, was never able to come on during that time, just based on how busy everything was and all that. But I'm glad I got to finally make it on now. And yeah.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to Keith Muelas for coming on, chatting with us about Play Indies and Xbox and all that other fun stuff. Aki and Bree are still here. We don't know where Jacob is. We presume he will show up eventually. Yeah. The dogs have not been sent yet to find him. Aki, are you sad the dogs have not been sent yet?
Yes, yeah, because I like doggos. And maybe they'll mull his face. You never know.
Good interview. That went a lot longer than I expected. We just we got into such good conversation over and over.
Yeah.
The achievement conversation kind of spawned a longer tangent than I expected at the end there. But
yeah. I didn't actually know any of that information. So that was all brand new for me.
It was a fun conversation, though. It was fun. Talking about Xbox and talking about streaming and creators and the different things that we have to go through, because key theft and key reselling is such a huge problem that we have to deal with, and it affects us big time, because obviously despite our tenure being around, some people only look at our views and are like, oh, they only have a handful of views, I don't know if they're legit or not. And because mm-hmm. there's other outlets out there similar to ours that have low view counts and are newer, they might not be legit either. And, you know, we have a hard time being taken seriously sometimes until they see that, yes, we've been around a very long time and we actually do the things we do.
Well, not only that, I've seen entire desk place be like, yeah, we don't give out keys anymore. Just... Mm-hmm. altogether, because they're they've been burnt so many fucking times, or they'll only give it out to very certain systems. A lot of them are only if you have a contributor page or whatever it is on Steam, you know, where that's what they do, is basically it's reviews on Steam. And it's kind of a pain in the ass to get one of those pages up and running.
Yeah.
Which is why it I haven't done it.
Curator page or?
Yes, that's what it is. Right. I think I'm pretty sure. And
I've
it's
seen
like
some outlets are like, if you're a Steam curator, we're not interested.
Oh wow, interesting. Yeah.
Some people like they don't want people who just. I think a lot of people do this just for free games, and they do the bare minimum. And that's like, all right, I streamed it on Twitch for a half hour. That's good enough. Let's move on to the next game.
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of outlets don't really put in the time a lot of games deserve. And it kind of reflects bad on everybody.
Yeah, I don't know. Fair.
Like, why would anyone take us seriously if these bigger outlets aren't doing what they're supposed to do? And we're fighting for what we do. And we can't get half the shit that we want, but
it's also real sad because, like, as mentioned in the interview, actually, they don't always know who even to contact about stuff.
Yeah.
So many of these places, they'll be like, okay, these are really big YouTubers. Here's a code, and those people will be given like 20, 30, 50 codes a day, but they don't really do that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like, so you're giving all these codes to all these really big influencer types, but they don't play the games. And then there's people like us we're not huge, but we would do more with it than most of them will usually. It's like,
there was a conversation when I worked in PR for indie games for a little while about how sometimes getting that code out in front of a bigger creator is all it takes to make your game go viral. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how do you on a budget encourage developers, you know, if you're not doing the keys and they are, like, we had kind of conversations around these things where, like, if you only have a budget for so much, try and go with the more passionate creator that's going to give your game more time versus the 50 million viewer channel that's going to maybe put it up for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's not going to help you.
Like, when you stream a game, you either stream it for a set number of hours or you beat it because it wasn't that long.
Yeah.
Like, you showcase games. You actually put time into them and show them off. And I see, I don't know how some people get away, like, doing a 15-minute video, and that's it.
Yeah.
First 15. Like, you gotta do more than that. People need more than 15 minutes of a game.
Well, I mean, there's different types of content for different people, and there are some people that short form is what they do because there is an attention span issue for certain age groups, certain types of viewers, and all that. So there's a place for that shorter content
but special. Like, if it's just the first 15 minutes with no commentary, no discussion, just gameplay,
it's just a quick peek, and I don't,
if you're doing a 15 minute edit of different parts through the game, okay,
that's,
I can
different.
Understand
yeah.
that.
Exactly.
You're putting work in.
That's
kind of
where I was
going
to get to that. Yeah. And it's really just because I always feel bad. I kind of try to gauge how long a game is when I go in, for example. And I'm like, okay, if I give this game 30 minutes, I'm going to be showing 50% of the game or more. Yeah. You know, if it's a little bit of a longer game and I can fit an hour or two in my schedule in that one showcase, that's going to give a good representation of what it is. And if it feels like it warrants better and the audience is responding well, it gets more time down the road.
Yeah.
Cause staggered content is a thing as well. You know, that you can oversaturate when a game comes out and not get staggered content creation. You lose a lot of potential audience there as well. Like, it's all fine and good to get that one big burst, but it's nice to also get that staggered content.
Yeah. You want that steady trickle. You don't want just a sharp drop off.
Yeah.
Just steady trickle, like the cum running down Jacob's chin.
Oh.
Isn't that right, Jacob?
He's muted.
Yeah.
He finally joins and he's muted right away.
Maybe he's still pooping. You never know.
He might be. Squeezing one out during the show.
He's done it before, if I remember correctly.
think he's, had he's having technical difficulties. Maybe. Could be.
I mean, that would be the story of his life, wouldn't it?
Or...
Oh, he's gone. It must have been technical
audio trouble.
Difficulties.
1 second. Yep, there he is in chat.
I just hit the wrong button. That was pretty funny.
But yeah, it's rough trying to be taken seriously, and
oh yeah,
hopefully Play Indies does a good job of getting curators who want to be seen and want to be heard, mm-hmm. and don't just want free shit.
Exactly.
Because that's the problem with this scene, is too many people just want the free stuff and don't want to put in the effort to give back to what they get.
Yeah,
we don't owe anyone a good review. We owe them a review.
Right. Yeah.
We're going to be honest with what we think about the game, but...
In my opinion, we do owe them a...
Yeah.
Yeah. In my opinion, we do owe them a good review, but a good review doesn't mean it's positive.
Yes. Fair. We have a thorough review. Yeah.
Smart ass. Jacob, your shit working?
Yeah, it's working.
Yay!
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 I'm not sure if that's Jacob doing it or if that's a sound, but...
Yay! So what, being owed a good review, what's all this nonsense,
dude,
about?
You have
just missed a really great interview.
So yeah. Much today.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about part of our interview earlier.
I was going to say, 25-minute
discussion on achievements at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, the Showtime channel's been running for almost 6 hours, so...
Yeah. We've had a long fucking day, dude. And then just stayed in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I showed up, I don't even think it was a full half hour, even before our first talk, and we had two talks, and then the podcast today. So yeah, it's been a day. A big day.
Yeah, we had Keith from Play Indies on, which we just talked about in the first half of the show. He also talked about his time with Xbox and with Tiny Build and being a streamer. And we were just chatting about how it's hard for smaller outlets to be taken seriously when there's big creators who just put in minimal effort.
Yep.
Okay.
So that's what our entire discussion was for about 15 minutes now.
Are names being named or...
No.
Or is this just a standard?
I don't know any streamers personally to shit talk them. Like, the only people I know who stream are good streamers.
And me.
No, I don't count you because you don't use a microphone, you moron.
Well, that's because I don't feel
you
like...
You also don't look at chat, you moron.
That's something you should work on, is looking at chat.
Yeah,
I can't because, like, I'm playing on my Xbox and not, like, a computer, so second screen, like, isn't
you
really...
You have a phone.
A phone. Yeah, that's what I
use. Yeah, no, I'm aware, but I'm usually, like, I just don't have, like, really...
Looking at porn on your phone?
No, I just don't really have, like, a good setup to make that kind of, like, worthwhile. And also... Hold on. Also, I really hate having to, like, stop what I'm doing, type out something, and then, like, go back to playing the game. Like,
that's
really annoying.
Mic.
That's why you suck my dick.
Careful, he might.
Don't you threaten me
it's
with
like
a good time.
It's like you want to stream, but you don't actually want to stream.
So, if anything, it would be like, I could be like one of those YouTube guys who just does like full gameplay, no commentary. Like, it would be something like that. Like,
yeah,
that's what my
Twitch
streaming
is for.
Yeah, well, I don't give a crap what Twitch is for. Otherwise, I'd be like sitting in a hot tub in a bikini and racking up like thousands of dollars.
No, you wouldn't.
Really? You don't think that there's gay dudes who would be like, hell yeah, like there's this like big bear, who's just sitting in a hot bullshit hockey. You know that there is a market out there for me.
Have you guys heard my hot tub stream idea?
Okay, let's hear it.
But right. Watch it.
Zoom in on my gas stove and a big pot of boiling water. and then you take the lobster and you put the lobster in, and when the lobster's done, you crack it open and you dip it in a big tub of melted butter. Ugh. And you just eat the lobster.
That's not a hot tub. Also, wouldn't you possibly get in trouble for animal cruelty on there?
No. You can get the animals done beforehand. You don't have to get a live lobster.
Okay. All right. So you
problem solved.
I mean, but
that's just a mukbang. But okay.
Yeah. Then you're just cooking.
I think that would be a great hot tub stream to instead of putting it as a cooking stream, because you would get this weird intersection of people. I think it would work.
You would have to put the lobster in a bikini or something.
Well, would you be in a hot tub while you're boiling this water?
No, the hot tub is the boiling water.
All right. So there's only, well, it's not like a meta hot tub, we're not doing a hot tub inception.
The thing is, you would need to have some good music playing.
SML After Dark.
Yes.
Wow. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have any sexy music on my soundboard. I could just be like, that's not really sexy.
I'm sure someone finds it that way.
Here we go.
Here it came.
Oh, you pay.
Oh, should we move on to the news? Because we got some news and reviews we got to tackle tonight.
Yeah, let's do it.
And this show is already creeping up over an hour and a half now, closing in on hour 45. So we should probably,
probably
get to news. Game Pass. Game Pass update for the first half of August fucking sucks. 3 games.
Yeah.
Okay.
August 11th, Date Everything.
Ooh.
Oh, nice. I just bought that recently.
Hey, you made the sacrifice. August 13th, Cricket 26 and Sandistry on PC.
Hell yeah, Cricket. Man. I love
there you go. There's your update.
Magazine.
There's your first half of August update.
Do we also get highlights?
For kids? No. You got to subscribe.
Come on. Come on. That was like Cricket, highlights. Like, All right.
I don't get it.
Cricket was a children's literary magazine in like the 70s through the early 90s.
That make you feel better?
No.
Is Jacob the gallant Aki's Goofus? Or are they both Goofus?
Don't you mean gallant?
Gallant.
No, it's gallant.
I don't give a
shit.
It's Goofus and gallant.
I have no idea what you old fucks are even talking about.
I don't know, but like also the Timbertoes. Come on, that's kind of.
If you name your kid like that, you're putting a weird spin on the pronunciation. You don't look like a friggin' weirdo. Although you're already a weirdo for having a kid named Gallant.
I figure, like, it's already weird enough that your kid's name is Goofus.
I mean, if your kid's name is Goofus, you're already fucked up. But Gallant? You want to sound more prestigious, like Gallant. Gallant Jacobson.
There is something very wrong with all of you.
Yeah, there is.
Highlights is still a thing. It's pretty fun.
So, yeah, 3 games joining Game Pass. 4 games are leaving, with Menace from the PC leaving, along with Firewatch, Aliens Fireteam Elite, and Atlas Fallen.
I managed to get the title update for Atlas Fallen done earlier this week, and I'm happy.
GG.
Good indie games. Play Firewatch.
That is a depressing first month of Game Pass. There were other games on the list, but it was all stuff just being added to premium. So it's already on Game Pass. I'm not mentioning it.
I really need to go back to Firewatch. Yeah, I bought that when I first got an Xbox One, but my TV was too small for me to be able to read the text on it. Ooh. And so so it's probably been almost like 8 years since I bought it.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is not a new game. That is for
I really need to go back and actually work on that.
Yeah, because that's probably a great game.
Well, we're talking about crappy Xbox stuff. Let's talk about those European price hikes.
Yikes.
Yeah, people were expecting a price hike. Nobody expected things to go up by 200 euro The 512 Series S is going from $349 to $499. The 1 terabyte Series S from $399 to $599. The 1 terabyte digital Series X, $549 to $749. And the 1 terabyte disc edition, $599 to €799.
Damn.
Yep.
Holy shit. I remember buying my Diablo bundle for $349.
Like $3.49?
No, you moron. $349.
Oh.
It's a
the full Xbox
console, you dingus.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the game.
No, the system bundle. We're talking about consoles right now. Pay attention.
I am paying attention.
I don't think you are.
Fuck off.
I got Dreamlight. My 1 terabyte Series S for $349.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Now you can afford a shitty Series S for the price of a originally 2 terabyte first come first serve Xbox Series X.
Yeah, what was my Xbox Series X? Was that $400 or $450?
They launched at $499.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, because I got it through that like monthly pay program or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that was the good way to do it.
Yeah,
the system and 2 years of Game Pass with zero interest or extra charges.
Yeah, zero. It was pretty great.
I don't know how they made money on that thing. There's no way they did make money on that thing.
That's not the point. The point is to get it into your house.
But like even 2 years of Game Pass, that was nuts.
Well, yeah, but you kind of paid for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you ended up saving like $20 or $40 in total from buying it all separately or some shit like that.
Just the fact that you were able to do that with a small monthly payment was nuts. That was such a good program. I wonder if they're going to do it again with all the console price increases.
Well, they said they were planning on bringing a system like that because everything was ballooning in price.
Yeah.
She said they were going to do, you know, stuff to where you could pay every month for new consoles and stuff again. So they're planning on bringing something like that back.
Hearing stuff about, this isn't in my notes, but we keep hearing stuff about this disc to digital positron project. Do you think we're going to see anything actually happen with disc to digital?
Because
for the past month, it's been like next week, we're going to hear the details. Next week, we're going to hear the details. Next week we're gonna hear it, and it hasn't happened yet, so I'm still waiting.
I'm hoping we do soon because I'm actually really interested in that program. It looks like that could be real damn cool.
I still have a handful of discs I would love to make digital, and and I wish it worked on older titles, but sadly,
doesn't it go all the way back to the 360?
No.
No, it's just it's an Xbox One
and newer, and it's not even all Xbox One games.
No.
Why must they make it difficult? Just make it work everywhere, please.
Because people bitched about it when they wanted to do it originally with the Xbox One launch. That's what the plan was, that you were going to use a disc, it was going to have a digital identifier, and it would lock it to your account, and then you don't need the disc anymore. It could sit on your shelf. And people,
I didn't know that was ever another plan.
Damn minds.
And the worst part about it is that it's actually Sony's patent on the idea. but Microsoft talked about it first. Then Sony was like, "Yeah, look at those Microsoft guys. They're fucking you up. What a bad idea. Who would do that when it's actually their idea?"
Yeah. And they were going to do it until they saw the backlash. And then they immediately put out that this is how you loan games to each other.
Yep.
And now Xbox needs to pull an Uno reverse and be like, this is how you loan games on Project Helix.
Yeah. Like, I thought that original stuff on the Xbox One was they were trying to get us to go purely digital, I thought was what that all was they were going to go pure digital and destroy the, you know, used gaming market altogether.
No. There were even plans that you would deactivate your disc if you wanted to trade or sell it. And mm-hmm. now we're at the point where it just does, their plan will do it automatically, where if you have a disc, you put it in and you play it, and then you give it to a friend and they pop it in their system, yours is gone. Your license is deactivated.
That's something I can get behind. I like that concept because it's basically the same as borrowing the disc, and it just means that after disc
anymore.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And
let it sit there. But I can't sell it. Okay, why should you be able to sell your disc and keep the game?
Exactly.
Greedy bitch. Oh man, Nintendo Switch Online got two new Virtual Boy games this week. And they were both unreleased titles with Zero Racers and D-Hopper.
Interesting.
Yeah, Chris talked about them briefly on our last episode. So if you want to hear about them, go check out the one that you probably marked as viewed already. Last bit of news I have, Marvel Rivals is getting a size reduction with the 9.5 update. It will be getting a 15 gig size reduction on console and a whopping 40 gig decrease on PC.
God damn. Hell yeah. That's awesome.
Yep.
Glad they figured out how to compress things finally.
Indeed. Well, I guess with a lot more focus on SSDs, they might be dropping HD support, like hard drive support, that might require an SSD.
I didn't realize that would change the size of the file.
Well, if it's on a hard drive, it's going to be a lot slower to access data, so it's going to need it in more places.
Oh.
Going to need that data in more places, so it can. It's like when CDs would have redundant data, so it would be quicker to load. Or redundant data across multiple disks.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
But, yeah, it'll load quicker by having less to load.
Nice. Finesse.
But that is my news. Aki, what do you have?
Well, D&D Hasbro has announced they've basically ruined the entirety of D&D. Or at least that is their plans. They had a big announcement thing a couple days ago, I think it was. And they're making D&D into like Universe Expanded or Universes Beyond or something like that, which is what they did that ended up making shareholders and Wizards of the Coast people sue Hasbro when it came to Magic the Gathering. So, yeah, you know how Magic the Gathering has had the 50 billion different packs that are other shit?
Yeah.
That isn't Magic the Gathering. Yeah, they're planning to start doing that with D&D, and their first one's going to be World of Warcraft, and they were like, because it makes sense, they're similar worlds. And then they announced the second one with Star Wars, because apparently it's similar enough.
Well, just remember, don't have to play with it.
Yeah, that's true.
You could just stay on your old rule book.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah.
They're also bringing AI again, even though everyone keeps trying to make them get rid of the concept of AI DMs, but they're bringing it back and introducing it into D&D Beyond, which no one wants. So they're, ruining it, and it's to be expected because it's Hasbro. And that's really all the news I had, was just Hasbro being a bunch of dumb fucks again.
Nice. Bree, what do you have?
Some server closures are planned for September for Hawked, Grid Legends, and Sociable Soccer 25.
Hawked? Yay. Wow.
Yeah. I think that one closes September 7th or something like that.
That was already
Sociable closed. Soccer is later in the month. Nope. Let's see. A game I reviewed a couple months ago, Tiny Lands 2 on PlayStation and Xbox, is getting free DLC August 7th. That's tomorrow or yesterday for those of you listening to the, yeah. Anyway, 20 new levels. I'm excited.
Goodness.
Shigeru Miyamoto. I can't word right now. The Nintendo game director thinks people don't care as much about console specs as they used to, and instead look toward the experience that can be provided by platforms like Wii, Switch, and DS. Any thoughts on that?
I'll be honest, I'd agree. I'd agree with them, because if you're buying a console, then you don't want to be like somebody who's fucking around with a PC having to constantly update your graphics card, your RAM, your blah, 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 blah. Like, it's a set thing.
Yeah.
Like, you just want to play your fucking games and not have to worry about it. That's it.
I think we're at a state of diminishing returns on how much more realistic visuals can get in games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we already have photorealism in games.
Yeah,
how much more powerful does it need to get? People were criticizing like how the new Halo looks. Like, even though like they're saying it's like even more lifelike, everyone's like, "Yeah, this looks like shit compared to even like the original." Like,
I haven't heard any about the visuals. I don't know.
Well,
what are they
the
saying?
Next thing on my list is to talk about Halo Campaign Evolved lead developer Halo Studios. They seem to have had a round of layoffs following their successful launch.
That, from what I hear, is absolutely nothing out of the ordinary, because it's basically all contract workers.
Yeah. But,
supposedly it wasn't as successful as Microsoft wanted.
Potentially, yeah. But yeah, I actually played the game last weekend, and some interesting changes. They've actually added accessibility functions, so you can play the game with like 200% health and better shields and do more damage and crazy, you know, stats like that. They also accidentally left that in so that you can do lasso that way.
Huh. Yeah, I heard that.
Hell yeah, that's hilarious.
So it's still legendary difficulty. You still have to deal with all the effects of all the skulls, but you can do it with like extra health and damage, which actually makes it a cakewalk.
I think I'm gonna play that this weekend.
I'm hoping you're gonna join me tomorrow and see what we can get done for you. It'll be fun.
If I still had Ultimate, I'd be playing Halo 2, but
yeah.
I do not have I haven't had Ultimate in a good long while. I have whatever the one right underneath it is, and Halo is not on that one, so.
No.
Well, more Xbox news. We kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but just to throw it in the news section for Jacob to comment. In an Xbox post reply, Asha Sharma hinted that a platinum trophy style system is on its way later this year for Xbox. So that's cool. Any thoughts on that, Jacob?
I mean, I guess that's awesome. That just means that you completed the like 100% of the game, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
See, I don't know. Like, I just want to know like how exactly that works. I mean, like, what if like you, what if you're playing like one of those games that like decides to like release a free update that you know adds an extra 1,000 gamers?
That's a good question.
You that no longer have the trophy?
If it's like PlayStation, the platinum achievement or platinum trophy is for the base game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not the DLC.
Yeah. Any DLC is separate and doesn't have a separate platinum.
So, yeah, we'll see what they do.
Thank God, many games are out there that already have a get all other achievements achievement.
So many.
It's redundant.
I mean, we're going to be reviewing a game that does later this episode.
Yeah,
well, not to brag, but I, according to True Achievements, I'm the 12th person to have finished it.
And the worst part of the concept of an achievement for getting all achievements is a good chunk of the time that motherfucker's broke.
Yeah,
and you can't get the goddamn thing. I fucking hate come across those in games because it's like there's like a 70% chance that motherfucker ain't gonna pop when you got everything else, and then you're gonna have to be like, I hope these assholes fix this. And then sometimes they don't. No, I hate that shit. I hate it.
Well, Xbox is also, they've recently rolled out an update to certain insiders that allow for cloud save management. an increase in the size of your store wish list to 1,000, and achievement filters that will let you search for things in your gamer score history to better plan your next gaming conquest. These features are in the test phase with insiders, so it may be a little bit before they reach the light of day for the average user, and they come with tweaks to the system by then. So,
something to keep in mind, right now, the only game that supports this save adjustment is Forza Horizon 6.
Yes, Forza Horizon 6. Mm-hmm.
I don't understand the save thing.
You can jump back to an older save file. Like if you got softlocked or if your save got corrupted, you could jump back to an older version of the save.
Yep.
Okay, I like that. That's cool. I remember back when games used to have that as just part of the game. So that's cool.
A lot of that got ruined because people would hack save files.
Yes.
To force achievements to pop and to force equipment that you shouldn't have. And that's why Xbox changed their achievement system to an online achievement system instead of offline. Yeah.
Yeah, people ruin stuff. Let's see. Next up, I only got two things left. Next up is...
It's Movie Watch. There.
See, I've learned to use the soundboard.
Yay. Proud of you.
I know we talked about this last week. Ryan Hurst is out for an onset injury for the live-action God of War series on Amazon. But rumor has it, Dave Bautista is in talks to fill the role.
Hell yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just a rumor at this point, or not even a rumor, but like, you know, he's in talks, there's no guarantee that he'll get the role, but that seems like a good, strong candidate I think a lot of people could get behind. And I am a little sad, though, because I recently realized the voice actor for one of the Bear McCreary Singularity story tracks was Ryan Hurst.
Yeah.
And hot damn did they lose a talent for that role, just listening to that audio clip. Again, holy hell. Anyway, he would have been great.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Ryan Hurst. I liked him as Opie on Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
And he had some, like, as the Outsiders or Outwilders or something, whatever it was. Yeah. Like WGN. And they tried doing original programming for a year.
Yeah. All right, last bit of news I have. Because I just need to hit all the buttons today. There's a hot new pinball table book available called Pinball, A Quest for Mastery by Tasker Smith. It's not about the history of the game, although there is some of that in the book. It's about how to play. It's over 250 pages. It includes fun Easter eggs, slipper codes, too. But mostly, it aims to help serious players improve their game. And I just thought that was really cool.
Nice.
Nifty.
It looks like a cool book. Definitely, if you are interested in upping your game, it might be something to check out. And that's all the news I have.
Better at handling balls.
Yeah.
Speaking of, Jacob, what news do you have?
Well, you okay over there, Aki?
And now I'm laughing because Aki's laughing.
Yeah, I don't know why the handling balls, right, Jacob thing. I don't know why that got me. That was good.
Okay. So on August 27th at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Netflix is getting Grand Theft Auto 6, an extended look. Yes. It will also launch on the official Rockstar YouTube game channel and the Grand Theft Auto 6 site later that day at 9 p.m. So I guess if you care enough and you have Netflix, then woo, you get to watch it 6 hours ahead of everyone.
This is a fucking trailer, people. The trailer.
It's Grand Theft Auto. People are going to go watch it on Netflix. That's just how Grand Theft Auto people are.
Yeah. Also another Rockstar news, we found out why there hasn't been another Midnight Club game. Essentially, a former Rockstar senior designer, Chris Roberts, who worked on the Midnight Club series along with Red Dead Redemption, said that pretty much Midnight Club is their redheaded stepchild, and Rockstar just doesn't give a shit because it's not Red Dead Redemption or Grand Theft Auto. So, I guess like it pretty much too. Means, yeah, or table tennis.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I have access to so many soundboards. What even is this?
You have Nitro?
I do not.
Maybe they opened that up. But yeah, there's a bunch of soundboards that you, if you're on a bunch of Discords, they all have their own soundboards, or they can. Wow. Yeah, that's why I keep making soundboards to have shit like.
Oh, that one's so fucking stupid.
Fuck that! So anyways, so, we good?
Yeah.
I know.
You're the one okay. who stopped.
So, well, you guys are the ones fucking around with the soundboard.
Yeah, that's so, always going to happen.
Anyway, so Chris Roberts said, even though it was competing with like Need for Speed and Burnout, data showed that players were actually playing Midnight Club longer than other game titles, other similar game titles, saying the perception is we never got the accolades or the reception. The New York perspective was, you're not GTA. When you're the redheaded stepchild project, you know, we're doing a good job. We're world class. We're still treated less than. So then Rockstar canceled Midnight Club 5 and the team was dismantled.
Damn.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
They said when they canceled it, it was pretty clear that there would be no more Midnight Club and everything was just going to be GTA stuff moving forward. And that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
So
it's depressing that Rockstar used to put out interesting games and now they're just the GTA studio.
Yeah.
They're the GTA Online studio more than anything at this point. But yeah.
GTA. Roblox tanked $9 billion in a single day. So their stock valuation.
Wait, hold on. Say that again about Roblox.
It tanked $9 billion in value in a single day. Because the company admitted in one of its quarterly reports that it had greatly improved its algorithm for suggesting like titles for kids to play, and it was directing fewer kids towards viral games that emphasize short-term monetization. And Wall Street was just like, oh, well, that's your bread and butter, so ta-ta, we don't care.
I'm just hoping it's sending them to less of the people who make games that they shouldn't be.
But the company projected a 14 to 18% drop in third quarter bookings year over year. And yeah.
Nice.
So the stock price dropped from 130 a share to less than 40.
Jeez. That's rough.
The dev mid-boss, who made the game 2064 Read-Only Memories, has filed for bankruptcy with over $800,000 in debt.
Yowzers. That's
a fucking shame. That was a good set of games that they made.
Yep.
And that's all I got.
All right.
Did we have any good news this week?
Well, I was going to talk about. I was going to talk about.
Fucking hell!
What?
I think a cat just did something that it wasn't supposed to.
You think it barfed or shat?
None of the above.
Okay, I'm back. Sorry, Potato decided to jump on my headphone cable and unplug them.
This is why I do wireless.
She's been so, like, it's never been a problem until recently. She has been so super clingy lately, and I don't understand if something's wrong or.
Yeah. Every time Teak goes through a phase like that, it makes me worried.
Now she's just eating food, so.
Okay.
Potato. All right, we're moving on to reviews then.
Yeah.
All right, let's dive into these. First game to talk about tonight is Vero, Curse of Faces, developed by Kezer Games and Last Orbit, published by Cobra Teku Games. It released July 30th on Series X and S, Switch, and PS5 for $24.99. The Curse of Faces, where revealing one's face means instant death, has befallen the world. Humanity was brought close to the brink. After 264 years of the era of solitude, a symbol of safety appeared. Masks. While the origins of the curse are still shrouded in mystery, many travelers still venture to the source of this curse in an attempt to reveal its secrets. Will you strive to lift the curse from the world, or will you harness its power for your own ends? Jacob, what is Vero, Curse of Faces?
So Vero, Curse of Faces, is an action RPG, and as you kind of described in it, like, the game sets, like, you know, the game drops, does, like, a huge lore dump at the very beginning, like most fantasy games will do, and pretty much, like, there was this huge virus that spread across the world, virus or plague or some shit, I don't like, but essentially everyone realizes that it's usually happening when people look at each other in the face, and so begins this age of solitude, and much like Palpatine, somehow humanity has survived, and there's this hero that rises up and, like, realizes, hey, everybody, if we all wear masks, then we're going to be okay. And so humanity kind of restarts anew. But everyone has to have this mask. And eventually scholars realize, like they're able to trace where all the trouble started. And you are tasked with going to, much like so many other mercenaries and thieves and stuff like that, you're tasked with going there. And when you wake up, because you go there and all of a sudden, like this fog envelops you, and you wake up and you don't remember your name and all this other kind of stuff. But the game tells you that you have to remember your name, AKA you make a name. So my guy's name is Susan. My wife decided to name him that. And when you start, the game, you know, does some very brief hand-holding. Like, this is how you run. This is how you attack. All right, have fun. Bye. And you're guided to this temple where you have to choose a mask. And you can choose... It's standard RPG things, like essentially a maze, a scholar, a thief, a knight, a brawler. I'm leaving out like one or two of them. And of course, there's also a faceless one if you just want to figure your shit out as you go along, which it seems like that is not a good choice, because that one, you start off at an incredibly low level and you have nothing built up. So you get dropped into this world and it's up to you to find out why this happened. And maybe you can harness the blight or plague, whatever it is. This is done in a first person. Keep that in mind. And it's very retro. Graphics, like, I would say, think of action games from 1997, 1999 ish thereabouts. Everything's very blocky, pixelated. Actually, I wouldn't say pixelated, but it's 3D rendering. Yeah, kind of like that. I was likening it to Star Wars Jedi Knight from way back in the day. And it is a very story heavy game. There are a lot of quests, and you have to talk to people, not only to find out what's going on, but also to get your next quest. Sometimes you can trade with people. But mostly you're just going to be getting your ass kicked by whatever monsters or like just random wildlife is out there. And it's not standard stuff. It's like flowers that have come alive and, you know, are going to whip their vines at you. It's going to be weird, like scorpions that are glowing purple and possibly like full of nuclear radiation. God only knows what. But you go through the land, and as you go through, you're doing more quests, and occasionally you will run into points where you can actually redo what mask you want to be wearing. And so if you're like, all right, well, I've been a brawler, you know, it's fun doing this, but, you know, I really want to, like, try out magic and see if, like, I'm actually better at doing that. You could actually do that if you want, which is kind of nice because, you know, it's going to suck if you're going through this whole game, you know, just to find out that, wow, I'm really terrible at fighting. Maybe I should be a magic guy instead, or maybe I should be a thief and just, you know, scamper on in the darkness. This is a game that is punishing, so you will want to save and save often. And also, one of the other things I would recommend is that, you know, even though you may be like a really strong guy, you got to fight the urge to want to fight every single damn thing under the sun, because the game, it has health potions spread out few and far between. And don't be surprised if, like, the health potion is located in the middle of a dead tree in a lava lake, because fuck you, that's why. It's a really interesting title. As I said, it's punishing, but it's also rewarding, and I'm having fun with it. I wish that there was like an easy mode on this for people who just care more about the story. I'm digging it. Like, you know, you can tell that this is definitely like a project of love, and respect for, you know, older action RPGs. I don't know how big the dev team was, but like, you know, I think this is a really solid game. It's just make sure you're saving a lot.
Cool. Well, the game clocks in at $25. What do you think of it?
Totally worth it. Like, this is, it's really cool. Like, I'm glad, like, I, you know, decided to check this out. You know, I honestly want to get better at it, but, you know, if devs, if you're listening, it'd be cool if you also put in an easy mode, please.
All right, let's move on to I Eat Paintings When Guards Aren't Looking, developed and published by Frog and Dove Games. It released April 8th on Steam for $5.99. Find hidden objects in famous paintings and eat them. Decode bizarre cravings, rip chunks out of Renaissance masterpieces, and snack your way through art history like the absolute menace you are. Bree, we just got this from playindies.com.
Excited.
What do you think of this one?
Well, I like it a lot. This is a find the hidden object game, but more like a hidden cat game than a hidden object puzzle game. You have classic paintings set up, including museum tags that tell you the artist, the year, and a little bit of history. There's also a little story about the very hungry protagonist that is eating, or maybe antagonist. I mean, he's kind of a villain, but he's also the anyway, point being, he's eating the paintings when the guards aren't looking, of course. And, since I mentioned this was more like a hidden cat game, there are actually cats in every level that give you achievements when you find them, each with their own name.
Yes. Question real quick. All right, so I know that you said it's like a hidden object game, but you said when the guards aren't looking. Is there like a stealth element to this?
Or no.
Is
it really no. Just,
okay.
No, that's just part of the quirkiness of the game.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So suggestions for improvement though in this game would be to put some kind of indicator on the level map that shows when you have gotten the cats already, because when you end the level without finding a cat, or you can end the level without finding the cat, and then you have to remember to go back later if you want to get all the achievements, if you're into that sort of thing. So that just my one suggestion for this game to improve it. Each of the 15 levels are beautiful. You can zoom in and out. You can move the screen around easily with a mouse. You can really zoom in. Oh my gosh. The object of the game, though, is basically to find the tastiest bits of classic art that have been listed in riddles for you to find. To drive home that you'll be eating segments of oil on canvas, you have a fork as a cursor. And after finding all the tasty linseed oil-laden morsels, you'll get a gastrointestinal representation of your meal. Basically, when you find an item, it disappears from the art like a little item-shaped tear in the art, and then later it appears as a little bit in your stomach on screen, and a food review will accompany it. It's really cute. Once in the level, you have a list on the right screen, or the right of the screen, I should say, with cute titles for what you're supposed to find, like the number 7, which is found on the billiard ball on the table, or a tempting vintage, probably about a glass of wine. But if that isn't enough to get you finding things to devour, you can click on the list item, and that'll give you a written hint that is sometimes punny to help you further. And if you're still stuck, the game has a built-in hint system. You can click on the Q button for a quadrant of the item that you're looking for. So there's 4 quadrants to every painting, and it'll even show you in a little picture, like quadrant 2 means the bottom left corner or whatever. I think it's quadrant 3. Anywho, and then if you're still stuck, you can click on I for image. I'm assuming it's an I for image. And it'll give you a little image that matches what you would see in the painting. And I liked these levels of hint. I had to use the image one once because there was a still hard to find item of a fishy image in a basket. It was just really hard to find. As for the classic art, there's Van Gogh and Caravaggio and Renoir and more. There's Bosch, which that's a whole thing. And I mentioned the zoom already, but the resolution of the art pieces are incredible. The detail you can see in them and really get close is amazing. Being a medieval history person, it was really neat to see a couple of paintings I knew well but hadn't been able to zoom in quite so well before. The humor in this is quirky and cute. There's even a little surprise at the end that had me giggle. I'm not surprised, but it had me giggle a lot. The music was lovely renditions of medieval and classic pieces. There was even some voice acting in this that was well done. There is a chapter select, so you can go back and find cats. This was a delightful, quirky experience.
Well, it's $6, so it's not a wallet breaker. What do you think?
I think the price is great. It is a short experience that does not have a lot of replayability, though. I enjoyed using the clues to find the hidden things as opposed to just clicking around looking for one kind of thing. If you enjoy hidden cat games, Meisterpiece Museum, something like Please Touch the Artwork 2, or even Procession to Calvary, you might like this game, and I am going to give it a buy it.
Very good. All right, let's talk about Shard Squad. Developed by The Root Studios, published by Nuntius Games. It released July 30th. Xbox Play Anywhere, Switch 1 and 2, PS4, PS5, $6.99. Survive an insane army of enemies with a squad of elemental creatures. Recruit new members for your team by defeating the bosses that cross your path and combine their traits to unlock powerful effects. Unity not only brings strength, it also creates new abilities. Jacob, what is Shard Squad?
So Shard Squad, think of it like Vampire Survivors teamed up with Pokemon. And that's more or less the basis of it. You start off as one of these elemental animals. You can decide who you're going to be at the start, and you're only given a couple, because the point of the game is that you're supposed to be playing this over and over again to unlock other ones. And each one of these kind of animals will have their own like ways to unlock them. It could be like you have to play to level 3 and defeat, you know, the boss in under 5 minutes or something like that. Or like you have to have these two animals like work together and it'll unlock like a future, almost like an evolution, but it's not like an evolution because they're like, they may look similar, but like they're really just of like the same elemental type. And so the elemental types are obviously going to be the standard stuff that you're used to. Fire, water, plant. There's like a magical one and
electric.
Electric. Thank you. So as you could play through this game, each one of the missions has like a certain amount of bosses. And after each boss that you defeat, you're offered the chance to pick, you know, a new, member for your little squad. And at like your first run through isn't going to matter as much because you're really just trying to unlock as many guys as you can. But once you start racking up more and more of these like little critters that you're able to use, what their stats are actually will start mattering because each of them has these attributes or attributes, however you want to pronounce it. Each one of them has these kind of like qualities. So it could be like friendship, lover, magical girl. And like, and so if you have like, you know, two of these, animals that have the specific lover thing, it's very quite possible that you're going to unlock like another, animal later on, but it also means that like, they're going to leave like little hearts all over the place and the hearts will heal your main guy, as you're running through the level, or, you'll get like a couple of like water ones together or like a couple of ones that are like have the heroic tendency. And so, like if they've got that, that means like it helps bring up the attack of everybody. And so it's really interesting why, like, because it seems like it's so easy to like think about, like, you know, how like in Vampire Survivors, it's just like, oh, well, if I combine the garlic and, you know, this thing, then I can only create one weapon, you know, or one upgraded weapon with this. Instead, with like all these different shards that you're like the little different animals that you're collecting, like it really expands the possibilities with this. And so like you could have like three magical girls, and like you're just like steamrolling through everybody because, you know, they're just kicking everybody's ass. Or as I said, like, you know, like the friendship one where like everyone's healing more often because, yeah, hooray, we're all working together. Or like the cooldown is, you know, a lot quicker. It's just like, it's a really interesting.
Let's get to the meat and potatoes. We know what kind of gamer you are. How is this for the one-handed gamer?
So if you want to, there is an auto aim. So you can do this. So you, I did regularly play this, you know, with my wife, like laying on me and sleeping. So you could definitely do this one-handed. That's fine. Also, there is co-op in this game, and I did get to play it with my youngest, who really enjoyed it and thought all the animals were really cute, and wanted to unlock everybody. With that one, you're kind of like tethered to each other. And so like the game screen won't split up, but you have to stay within like a certain proximity to each other, and the closer the proximity, like the more powerful you like your dual attacks will be. Now granted, only one of you is going to be able to decide what like which ones you like, what new members you choose in the group, but you know, you can get stuff done more like quickly. You can gain experience more faster if everyone's like working together and just like collecting all the coins and stuff that drop. And it works rather seamlessly. I did not have any issues with it. But yeah, like it's a pretty fun game. My only actual issue with the game, like I meant to say, like I didn't have any issues with the co-op. My only issue with the game is that in the, like the main landing area, which is where like you will start before every mission, there is a person who is kind of like, the person that you buy, like that you upgrade all of your permanent abilities through. Sometimes after you've finished a level, they're not there. And what you have to do is pretty much just stop, save your game, quit out, like completely quit out, and then restart the game, and boom, they're back. I think
that may have been updated so that they're always there. Because the past few times I've played, they've never been missing, thankfully.
Okay. They were... I think the last time I played it was 2 days ago, so it may have...
It's possible it may have updated.
Okay.
Well, I'm not entirely positive on that one. I have a gripe with this one myself, and it's more of a technical thing that I hope they can fix. There is DLC available. $1.99, you could get a wind pack, 4 new creatures that you could unlock of the wind variety. It only works on console. It does not work on the PC.
Oh, is there a separate DLC for the PC?
No, there is not. That's the DLC weird. Just doesn't exist or work on PC. So I have the wind creatures unlocked on console, but I can't use them on PC because the DLC doesn't exist for it. So hopefully they could fix that and update the DLC to make it a Play Anywhere DLC and include Windows, please. Because I paid $2, I'd like to use it on PC.
That's fair. Yeah. And like, this would be a good game to like fart around with on the PC too.
Yeah, but I love this game. I have had so much fun with this one. The achievements are kind of going to be a pain in the ass, but you know, whatever.
Grindy, yeah.
I really enjoyed this one. For $7, what do you think?
Honestly, I'm having a lot of fun with it, and I really like the fact that like me and my kids can play this together, you know, co-op. So any simple game that isn't Minecraft that I'm able to play with my kids, like I'm pretty cool with. So I'm glad I'm glad we're both having fun with it, and honestly, it's a good introduction to like the survivor genre game genre for my kids, because they've kind of like poo-pooed other ones other than extremely powerful capybaras, but
all right,
but yeah, let's, like, for $7, like, totally worth it.
Yeah, I agree.
Get it.
Next up, Case Solved: The London Files, developed and published by Minimal Games. It released July 29th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch One, Switch Two, PS5, PC, $9.99. Solve logic puzzles and crack multiple cases in a cozy noir London using reason, not guesswork. Murders have taken place, witness statements conflict, and the alibis don't add up. Everyone has a motive, and only clear logic reveals the truth. Bree, did you solve the case in Case Solved?
I solved all of the cases, like, sweet, all of them. Yeah. I got a big 100% on this one. So Minimal makes great puzzle games, but this was a huge departure for me from the chess games I'm used to. This is a detective mystery logic and deduction game. There are three cases with multiple stages to solve. Each case gets a motion comic style intro with speech bubbles and gibberish narration. And once you get into the crime scene, you have things you can click on, like stickers that breathe, of the characters you can interview, the suspects. Details on the scene that you can click on are like clues and evidence. And when you talk to the suspects, they may give you hints to where the evidence or clues are. So when you click on something correct, it turns into a sticker object, and you have like a visual representation of everything. So the first part of each stage, you're using your cursor to talk to suspects and gathering evidence. So, like, you can do this one of two ways. You can either click randomly in the environment for something that looks like it sticks out, like near the dead body or the chalk outline, because they it's very family friendly. They have a chalk outline. there might be a violin, and you can click on the violin, and it'll show up as one of your pieces of evidence, with the location that it was in the subway near the body or whatever. Or you can talk to one of the suspects, and they'll be like, "Oh, hey, I don't know what was up with that violin." Now you know to go violin. So you can kind of solve this one of two ways, either by seeing things that look out of place to you and clicking on them, or by talking to the suspects and then going and finding that piece of evidence, or you can do some mixture of both. Once you've collected all the clues, You enter a deduction board screen where you have clues that are like a logic grid puzzle. There is a grid for you to fill out with drop-down menus. If you've never done a logic grid puzzle, you have like a grid with things like suspects, names on the top, and then their motives. And then you have to take the clues given, like the manager isn't suspect number two, and suspect three was jealous, and so on. And by clicking X for no and check mark for yes, or whatever you want to do, you can deduct the right order of things. I happen to love these kinds of puzzles, so this was a really big win for me. And you get a lovely ding when you get the logic grid right, and then you move on to another bit of story to wrap up that stage or case. The story progresses through varying stages in each case with motion comics and box text. There are 5 stages per case that we do to solve some murder or other, making 15 logic puzzles. But that's not all. The puzzles get progressively harder, and sometimes it felt like I needed to draw a grid on paper or just take some notes so that I could get through the puzzles. Because sometimes there are as many as 25 slots to get through for different things. And the clues for the grid puzzle section of each stage are color-coded, so you easily know which category on the grid to place it, which I thought was really handy. And then there are cats you can find in each of the scenes that give you a hint. Yes. So when you click on the first one, you get an achievement for your troubles, and if you find all the cats, you get some achievements for that, too. I never really needed to use the hints, so I don't know how the hints work. But there are hints if you find cats. It was cool. The humor in this was good. The suspects were fun. The art style and music were pleasant. The game had an element of polish to it that I wasn't expecting it to be bad or anything. I just like, oh, this was a pretty sophisticated and polished little game. There were also
hold on, we're getting ready.
Oh, okay.
We got some screaming going on.
Oh my.
Welcome in, Trivium Champ and Company. Thank you for the raid. Good to see you, Triv. Hope you are doing well. Someone give Trivium a shout out, please. But yeah. We are chatting about Case Solved: The London Files, which is out now on pretty much everything from Minimal Games. What were you saying again?
Also hidden codes that you can input in the classified section on the main menu that unlock 42 secret files for you to fill out the mysteries a bit. And that's 42 more short puzzles for you to solve. They don't come with as much story as the initial cases, the 15 missions that you do there or puzzles that you do there. But they do have a little bit of story with them. The first clue I got to opening this was actually in the achievement name. And then I got a clue in-game for another code, and then I just jumped around until I found them all. I looked up a few online. These puzzles range in difficulty from 2 to 5 magnifying glasses, and they seem to have no order to the difficulty in how you find them. But, you know, 2 being easy, 3 being a slight bit of a challenge, and 5 being kind of hard in comparison. So yeah, there's like 57 puzzles total in this. That was a pretty good amount. If you like logic grid puzzles, this was really fun. There are a few small bugs where I got stuck in the menu because my cursor color went away. The codes were a bit of a challenge to find at times. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with this one. It filled a puzzle void for logic grids I didn't know I had. I used to do magazines every month that had like the logic grid puzzles in them and all the different styles of logic puzzles. I really like logic puzzles. So this was good.
Very good. $10. What do you think?
I think the price is good. It doesn't outstay its welcome. It's an easy buy for me.
Works for me.
All right.
All right, Aki, it's your turn. Lost and Found, a This Bed We Made story, developed and published by Low Birth Games, released August 5th on Steam for $6.99. Lost and Found is a standalone short story game taking place aboard a 1960s transatlantic ship. Play Sophie Roy and her new job as a stewardess and help solve a curious series of thefts in this narrative-driven mystery set after the events of This Bed We Made. I did try to get This Bed We Made for you, Aki, but I did not hear back. So instead, we're just going to take a look at Lost and Found by itself. What do you think?
That works.
Tell me about it.
So in this, you are playing a stewardess on a boat. I want to call it a cruise liner, but it would be like the olden.
I'm on a boat. Everybody look at me because I'm sailing on a boat.
Yeah, and basically, what she is she, think of her like a maid at a hotel. That is basically her job. And apparently someone has stolen some shit on the boat, and it's up to you to find it, because the owner of the place is like, I really don't want to create a scandal, because this is ye olden days. He's like, I don't want to make a scandal. So while you're in there, you know, cleaning up the room and getting them their coffees and whatever other bullshit they want you to do, just do a little bit of them there snooping around for me, please. And, you know, if you find the stuff, just let me know who it is so I can tell them at the next port to get the fuck off the boat and stay off of it. And this is set after This Bed We Made, and she had done something at least similar to this in that story, apparently. So she's like, yeah, sure, fuck it, why not? I guess I can do that. It's easy enough. And yeah, so it's set about basically over the course of one day, and the game took me just barely over 2 hours to finish. And yeah, you just go around, you clean, I think, 7 rooms, and you look for clues in there in order to open various different locks and things like that. You get to actually interact with a few people, and you can talk to them about different issues that are going on, and if you find certain other bits of clues, you can talk to them about new things, but those conversations are like one-time-only conversations, so if you didn't find the clues, you don't get to talk to them about whatever this other thing is, and it'll be grayed out saying, oh, you haven't found this piece of information yet. And yeah, you just go looking around, you figure out some puzzles that are like, oh, this uses a combination, now I have to go figure out how to find this combination, and it might be in another person's room because they're somehow related, or something like that. It's not too complicated, it's all pretty simple. And yeah, there's not a lot to say on this, because again, it was just barely over 2 hours.
It advertises itself as a short 1 to 2 hour DLC that expands on the This Bed We Made. Playing the main game first is recommended but optional, so it wasn't necessary to play it, but it seems like if we could get our hands on that for you to take a look at, it would help quite a bit.
I've been wanting to play that game for a while. I
will tell you right now, if it plays like this, you're gonna like it. Yeah. I'm gonna tell you that right now. You're gonna like it. This is not like a Sherlock game. This is not Deep Thoughts. You do the stuff, and it's kind of obvious. So yeah.
All right. Well, this DLC story standalone DLC is $7. What do you think?
I'm 100% for this. This was really fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It only took me a little over 2 hours to get my first playthrough, which got me most of the achievements. I think I have 7 missing, and there's a couple different endings and like mutually exclusive style achievements in it. So yeah, it's a nice, simple, quick little thing. And now that I know most of the answers, the next playthrough is going to take me like 30 minutes. So yeah, I'm all for it. This is a great game.
Cool. And if people are looking for This Bed We Made, it is on sale until August 19th for half off, down to $12.49, normally $24.99. Oh, yeah. There's also a bundle with the game and the DLC available. It's showing $15 for me. I'm not sure if it'll show a different price for you because Steam is weird like that, but
Yeah, it'll show different for me, but I have the other game, so.
Give her a look, and if it sounds interesting, grab it on sale, I guess.
You know, I might just pick this up today, just because I like the DLC. I might just grab the main game right now.
Nice. All right, Jacob, come on. You said it in chat twice. Get it out of your system with the Raging Clue.
Oh, Jesus. I found a Raging Clue.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Such a hard clue.
Oh, this is a Raging Clue right here in your pants. Raging
Clue. Oh, Jesus. This clue is so hard. All right. The next game is The Green Light, developed and published by Take It Studio, released July 27th on Series X and S for $4.99. One late night on a dead-end job, a mysterious voice on the radio tells him that a distant green light promises the peace and freedom he's been searching for. With nothing left to lose, Fred sets out on a journey into the darkness where he must confront the depths of his own mind, discover a story of self-discovery, and decide whether freedom is worth the ultimate sacrifice. Jacob, Bree, both of you played this. Bree, how about you start us off? What is The Green Light?
So this is like a first-person, we'll call it a horror game. I don't know. It was kind of light on the horror elements. And you're like, you've got this really terrible job. Your boss somehow has a British accent, but he's very American, like, stereotype. There's a big American flag and, like, a rifle on the wall. I don't know. That was a little weird for me.
This was the most confusing adaptation of The Great Gatsby I've ever had to deal with.
But yeah, you start kind of looking around, the lights go out, and you can't do your work anymore, and the boss is on the phone, like, yelling at you, like, well, go find something to do, like, clean up the trash I clearly left around my desk in a sloppy fashion to, like, give you something to do if I, you know, feel like it. So you gotta go find a broom to clean up the trash, and you can't, like, you find, like, some notes that basically, like, some people have disappeared and something about this green light. And of course you've seen the green light, but you don't really know what it is. And eventually you get out of the building, which took me way too long.
It really does.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And you talk to someone on a radio, and they lead you to this car to get you out of town to find the green light, convinces you to go look for the green light, like that's somehow the solution to your happiness. And you start following the path of other people, and you find these little clues along the way of other people that have disappeared from your office that were following the green light. And yeah, you kind of stumble around exploring things, trying to solve minor puzzle elements. And
I have a problem right off the bat.
Okay.
I'm looking at the store page and I see screenshots, and the one is blue.
Oh,
it's blue light instead of green light.
Weird. That's
bullshit.
All right. Yeah.
I expected green light and everything, and there's blue. What is this? Jacob,
There's also some red lights too.
I know orange in it. Like, what the F? Jake, yeah. What are your thoughts on this one? Continue on.
So, I mean, as Bree was saying, it's going to be you doing a lot of clicking and trying to figure out, like, what you need.
You need.
I really. What?
Nothing. No, never mind.
I didn't say unique.
I know.
Well, now you did.
Yeah, now you did. Unique.
It's going to be you trying to click through a lot of stuff. And the game describes itself as an E for everyone.
Yeah.
But it's also a horror game. And by horror, it's like...
Psychological.
You're going to see some weird stuff occasionally. There might be some jump scares because, like, a weird creature will, like... you know, briefly appear behind you. Visually, I think it's an interesting game. The story, I wish it would have picked up some, like, I wish it didn't require as much clicking. Like, just trying to find, like, where everything is. But, I don't know, like, I thought it was okay.
So some other things to note on this, the developer is Walidzo, on this, that also did the Black Within, which I believe Aki played.
I was just going off, what the Xbox.
Yeah. Said. The Xbox store. Yeah. And I only learned that from playing the game, because it's in the intro credits. The audio mastering on this was all over the place. There was loud clipping audio and then really soft audio that seemed, it was kind of all over the place.
You're going to need to depend on the subtitles.
Subtitles. The voice acting was passable. I thought some of the clues were a bit obtuse. I just struggled to find things, and I'm usually pretty thorough at searching, and it just didn't click where to go in some of these linear segments.
That click.
Yeah.
I don't know. Also, I wish I could mess with the brightness with it.
Yeah. Well, and that brings me to a big giant pet peeve. The menus were white and different white. And that made it hard to tell what was on the screen. So, like, if the start button is white lettering and it's like slightly brighter than the delete your save button below it. Not that that was exactly what happened here. This is such a pet peeve of mine. Like, do something, underline it, make it a different color, and put an arrow next to it.
Yeah.
Something. So you don't accidentally start your game over or something, just something. Yeah. White and different white does not work.
All right. Well, let's talk about price on this one. There's some gripes, but it sounds like overall, maybe for $5, it might be worth checking out.
Yeah. $5, I would say for $5, I give it a try it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say at minimum, it's a try it. Like, I don't know if I'd say like rush out immediately, but if you've got $5 to burn, yeah,
it was worth the playthrough. Yeah.
Yeah. And Lord knows we've spent worse on $5, so.
Yeah.
I've had a fill of what you're talking about.
Oh.
All right. One last game to talk about tonight, and it's been a while, but we're going to Kids Corner. Norg.
Kids Corner! With Jacob and friends.
That is right. Kids Corner, Paw Patrol, Dino World, developed by 3D Clouds, published by Outright Games. We are Outright Ambassadors. Proudly Outright Ambassadors. Despite
Lord only knows why they love us.
Our best efforts. They still like us. Released July 31st, Xbox Play Anywhere, Switch. Ooh, Play Anywhere. Nice. Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Roar! Sounds like trouble. Did that come from Dino Island? It sounds like Rex needs the Paw Patrol to save the day. Mayor Humdinger's causing chaos. Dinosaurs are scared and running wild. Help them get back to their family safely. Jacob, what is Dino World?
So, Paw Patrol Dino World is the latest in the Paw Patrol series that Outright Games has done. And much like taking a note from Paw Patrol World, which got released, I think, a couple of years ago, it is an open world game, which is very refreshing to see with this. And so the plot of it is that the Paw Patrol has to go help out at the Dino World Island thing, which I believe is from a special and also the upcoming movie that releases next month. And the big draw for me was that Rex is one of the dogs that you get to mess around with in here. But unfortunately, you don't actually get to play as Rex. He's really just like, oh, well, you need to go here and you need to do this. Not gonna lie, I was really disappointed with that because I was really hoping to finally play as Rex, and maybe Outright later on will release some sort of DLC thing to let you do that. For those who don't watch Paw Patrol because you don't have kids or what have you, Rex is a differently abled dog. He's missing his, or not necessarily missing, but his hind legs don't work. And so he's hooked up to like, kind of like one of those little doggy wheelchairs. So he's got two wheels in the back. I've always liked Rex, because like when I'm forced to, like when I was forced to watch Paw Patrol with my kids, I always liked Rex and Rocky.
Sure.
Listen, okay, like you sit through this stuff, you eventually do start having your favorites, and like I've got my gripes with Paw Patrol on certain stuff. It's just like Marshall doesn't get the respect that he deserves. Like, why does he always get treated so clumsily? He's actually really nice. Like, you know, whatever. Anyway, so it really feels weird being like, as a 41-year-old adult, I'm very disappointed I don't get to play as Rex. all right, so anyway, so it's an open world game, and the dino world is separated into four different areas. Like, I want to say climates, but it's really not different climates. It's like, here's different jungles, and here's the volcano area, which is very rocky and full of crystals and stuff like that. But they're all pretty much the same, and you get to play as the main six Paw Patrol dogs. So you have the police one, Chase, Marshall, Fire, Rocky, who is recycling, Rubble, Construction.
Casa Grande.
Well, what are you going to do? Zuma, who is like the, like kind of like the search and rescue, but mostly water dog, and Sky, who is also the only girl on the group, but she has like a jetpack, and her vehicle is like a little fighter jet kind of thing. So with this, you're able to use different the Paw Patrol characters' different vehicles, which are, of course, all dino-themed, because this is Dino World. So, naturally, shocking. Like, Rubble's... Huh?
It's a shocking.
Oh, yeah. Like, Rubble's, like, bulldozer is shaped like a triceratops. That kind of stuff. And each of the different sections... of the four different sections, there are five dino eggs that you have to find. There's decorations that you can find to decorate for the various dinosaurs, as well as getting some costume like stuff that you can unlock for your pups, but also for the dinosaurs themselves. So if you want, like, you know, so if you want Zuma rocking like an Elvis hairdo, you can, or like, you know, give them one, like one of them a baseball cap, you can do that. You can also give like glasses to the dinosaurs, or like a spike collar for whatever reason. And as you complete each area, like the main dinosaur from each area will then go back to the Dino World, like main camp, where they're able to be taken care of, because as it turns out, each one of these dinosaurs is also an expectant parent. And all five of the, eggs, like if you gather them all, you're able to hatch them, which then only releases one dinosaur. So that really raises some questions whether, you know, the one dinosaur ate all the other like little babies as they were in the nest, or if they really only just decide to put one baby out there for whatever reason. I don't know, but it's kind of weird when you think about it, so don't. And then you also get to take care of the various dinosaurs. So, and this is done using little mini games. Like, so some of them you have to feed them, which requires like using Chase or Rubble's special powers. And then like you gather up the stuff, and then if it's like leaves or something like that, you get to mash it into this like little thing. So then the Brachiosaurus can then eat it, or you could use like Marshall's water cannon to either fill up their water dish, which is like a huge kiddie pool, or, sometimes you'll have to use Marshall's, water hose to clean off the dinosaurs. And because Power Marshall is also,
Sim.
Not really, but yes. Like, it's a very basic version of that, and sometimes it glitches and will not recognize that you've actually completed the activity, so then you have to exit out and then go back in to do it again, all over again, which can be kind of annoying, but, like, at the same time, I'm also, like, a 41-year-old guy who, you know, I may have gripes with it that like a 6-year-old will not. So like Marshall, because he's also like a firefighter and in charge of like the first aid stuff, like he's in charge of like healing them. And I think that's all like the mini games with that. But as you're going through the story, which believe it or not, there is one, I'm not saying it's a good story or that it's, you know, controlled by logic, at all, especially with the ability to fast travel, because in one part, Rex's dinosaur goes missing. Yet if you use fast travel, Rex and his dinosaur are how you use fast travel. So the game doesn't actually disable fast travel during that mission. It just, you know, you just, the dinosaur is just there, even though he's also missing. I don't know. But, like, again, this is Paw Patrol. Not exactly, you know, this is not going to be winning the Pulitzer Prize anytime soon. So yeah, so as you're going through this, pretty much you just like each level ends with some sort of like a boss, kind of like a, not really like a boss battle, but a boss activity, where you're chasing after Mayor Humdinger, which leads up to the end of the game, and of course the big finale with it. After you're done, there's still plenty to do. Like, you can still run around, and if you haven't collected everything, you're still able to go ahead and do that. I don't know whether you're actually able to like repeat missions. I didn't bother to check that, to be honest. However, the game says that it has co-op on it. And my youngest and I tried doing it, but frequently co-op would kind of like glitch out, and neither one of us were able to use our abilities with it. Which was really disappointing, because like he really wanted to play this game with me, but it breaks the game currently. It breaks the game. So then you just like, you're constantly having to hop out, restart the game, and then go back to it. And like, it really just, it really drags.
Hopefully that's something 3D Clouds could take a look at and get fixed.
I'm hoping so. But I mean, like, compared to Paw Patrol World, like this feels like a much bigger game. The vehicles don't handle as well, in my opinion. Which again also feels really weird as a 41-year-old guy. You know,
that's like, weird coming from a 3D Clouds title, because they do so many racing games. It'd be weird that the vehicles don't handle well.
It's just honestly the only one that I felt handled well. Well, all right, hold on. So there may actually also be an issue with that, because the game finally lets you loosen up the camera. And so you can actually control the camera with it. And that may also be the reason why they don't handle as well, because they're supposed to be kind of like automatically on a rail.
Gotcha.
With like the previous like camera control. So the fact that, or lack of control, I should say. And so I had that activated. And so for me, the only one whose vehicle really ever like handled well was Sky's plane. Everyone else, like, it's just like Marshall's fire truck, Rocky's recycling truck. Like, those things handle like tanks. Like, it is, like, honestly, it was easier to just hop out of my vehicle, run like wherever I needed to as one of the pups, and then hop back in to take care of whatever I had to.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, hopefully that's something that they're going to fix later on anyway. But honestly, my biggest gripe is that you don't get to play as Rex. Like, the only time that we've gotten...
Oh boy, here we go again.
What? No, the only time that we've ever been able to play as Rex is during the racing games. Like, come on, man. Like,
The write-up says Rex needs Paw Patrol to help and save the day, so the Paw Patrol's there to save the day.
Yeah, but here's my thing. Like, one of the things that like I Yabbits like are about in the yard. Rex. What?
The Yabbits are in the yard.
I don't. Oh,
you said Yabba. I said Yabbits are in the yard.
All right. So here's my thing. Like,
thank you, Bree.
All right. So Rex, again, differently abled. Okay. Like, and it's really cool that, like, they've included him into the game, but then, like, he's, like, in the show, he's shown that he's able to do, like, just as much as the regular Paw Patrol characters are able to do. And in this, like, he's relegated to almost, like, kind of like a Professor X role. Like, you know, from like X-Men, where it's just like, oh boy, well, the guy's in a wheelchair, so he's not going to be doing any action. And it's like, oh, Paw Patrol to me. Like, you know, no, like, come on, man. Like, let him like go around and like, you know, race around in his vehicle or whatever. Like, he's got them. Lord knows they've made plenty of toys based on this. Like, it just feels, short-sighted and disappointing for me. And kids may not even notice it, but I just think, is it nice that the character's included? Yes. Do I wish it that they had done way more with said character? Also, yes. Like,
I mean, at least they're being featured in general.
Yeah, but
take what you can get, man. Take what you can get.
Rex deserves more. Justice for Rex.
Well, the game clocks in at $40. I need a verdict, Rex or not.
So for $40, if you've got kids that love Paw Patrol, this seems like an easy slam dunk. The co-op is currently a bit broken, but, you know, hopefully they'll fix that pretty soon. Honestly, it would be good for that, because then, like, parents can help their kids guide their kids through stuff that they might have issues with. Because a lot of the game is going back and forth between multiple locations. It's a lot of fetch quests. Which, honestly, with the size of the game, like, some kids may have issues with it. But in all honesty, $40, if you got a kid that loves Paw Patrol, go for it. If you're doing this just for the achievements, like, the game can be completed in about 7 hours to 100% it. It's a relatively easy 1000K, but yeah, if you're a Paw Patrol fan, I think you'll be pleased.
Very good. I like Trash Rando in chat saying, my son is butt at the Paw Patrol game, needs to get good ASAP. Get good, Scrub.
Well, yeah.
On that note, we are done with this episode. Thanks to the three for being here, hanging out. Big thanks to Keith for coming on the first half of the show, chatting about Play Indies and about Xbox and about achievements and about all that fun stuff. Music this episode, since we wrapped up with Paw Patrol, I'm going to play a track from Nintendogs from our friends Mustin and Dale North.
Okie dokie.
How's that sound?
Sounds great.
Woof, sounds woof. Awesome.
Bark. Barky bark. Bark. Does anyone barky have any bark final barks bunch? To bark the bark?
I do. On the topic of dinosaurs.
Okay.
What do you call a fossil that just lies there?
Fossil that just lies there. I don't know.
Lazy bones.
No.
This podcast is over for now and has gone extinct. Until next time!